Hello and welcome to the Scotchcast. This is the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 Community's off-topic podcast where we talk about games, movies, books, other shit. Joining me today is Thurbleton.
What's up there? What's up, everybody? I'm trying not to make up for the last time I did this.
Oh my god. Last time I was high, you were low. This time I am not feeling energy right now.
Last time I just said hey and you thought that was too low key.
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily the hey, it was the long pause before and after the hey that killed the pacing and energy of it. Durin is also joining me today. How are you doing?
You know, I was gonna say that if we're gonna talk about books, I'm fucking out of here, but then I remember Noob's not here, so
yeah, Noob's
we can totally
here.
Talk about books.
Yeah.
Guys, there's this book I've been reading. It's amazing. We're gonna talk about it for the next 10 minutes.
It's about history,
it's called,
guys.
It's called the Encyclopedia.
Possibly Warfare. Oh, God, that guy. Anyway, Noob couldn't be here today. And so is just us three. This is going to be one of those special episodes with few people and therefore probably going to be short. I don't know. We'll see. But we do have things planned to talk about. So where do you guys want to start? Do you want to start with what we've been playing? The first topic, the second topic, news? Where are you
up
to?
I guess we could say this is the Scotchcast episode, what, like 12?
12, yeah. Either way, let's get. Where do you want? Where do you want? I'm making it host's choice.
Well, I think we'll save the main topic for the tail end of it. So I guess just what we've been playing.
All right, what have you been playing, Thurbleton?
It's just regular stuff. I picked up a lot of stuff for the Steam Greenlight bundle thing.
So how long did that last? So was it Steam's discounting up to 75% off everything that is on
Greenlight?
Basically,
for folks who don't know, Steam Greenlight it's been going on for a year now, and because of that, they have 50 plus Greenlight or greenlit games that are up to 75% off.
Okay, so it's greenlit games, not games that are currently on Greenlight that is
correct.
Okay, all right, so that's probably pretty good then.
Yeah. There's a lot of good titles, a lot of ones we talked about before in the past, so I won't go into depth about how awesome it is. But
where's the list?
The fact that
I'm gonna find the list. I'm gonna look at it while you speak about it. Where's the list? Do I just click this?
Just go to the front page of Steam store, and it's on the top.
Oh shit! Euro Truck Simulator is $14.
Yeah, it is. You get awesome sales like that. Bleed, a really good like action platformer, is like $3. Kentucky Route Zero, a game we've talked about before, is 50% off for like $13 or $12.50, I think. But yeah, I picked up Shelter for, it's like 10% off, but whatever, it's like $9.
Yeah, I was really sad that it wasn't more than that because I really want to check that game out, but I don't have a lot of extra money right now.
I mean, so it's when late. You already make a price that's less than pizza, how far lower can you go?
It's mostly, I think, just that it just came out too.
Yeah.
Oh, that pizza on. Metric.
It's a good metric.
Wait, so
I picked up Receiver as well. Well, I haven't played any of these because unfortunately I'm preparing for PAX and it's a busy weekend for me.
I'm shocked by the lack of Gunpoint in this list. I was going to pick it up if it was on here.
Was that on Greenlit? I don't know. Like you'd expect it to be, but also maybe he like got it signed up before Green.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You know what? Yeah. That's something I can ask Tom Francis when I see him at PAX. That's one of the things I
really
want to do.
But let's see. I'm probably going to pick up Papers, Please. 20% off. Yeah, that's probably there. How long does this last for? Let's have a look. Listen to us shopping on the Scotchcast.
Oh, okay. They're going to be until September 2nd. So probably like the day this podcast comes out.
Oh, no. Well, you'll know what we bought in this riveting episode. I'm probably going to pick up Papers, Please. Spoilers.
Anyway, I hope to talk about Shelter as well as Receiver, and it's a game that's been out for a while, but Game Dev Tycoon.
Okay,
so cool. How much of that have you played?
Zero. A friend came from in town, so I had to pick him up, and they've been showing him around town. It'd be kind of rude to be playing single player games with.
I suppose someone
visiting.
Well, I will say with that game, it's kind of like Prison Tycoon, and it's one of the games I think that you don't come back to fairly often. But when you go to sit down to play it, maybe be sure to give yourself like 2 or 3 hours because you very easily can fall into that game.
It almost feels like the word tycoon shouldn't be applied to this because it is different from the other games that it like Roller Coaster Tycoon. It's
yeah,
no, those carried a certain weight to it and a certain like design, and like Prison Architect or Game Dev Tycoon.
Yeah, are all the other ones like construction based? Like you make stuff. Is that how all the other tycoons are?
Well, it's not just that, but it's also like in those they're like very lighthearted. I mean, this one is too, but they're like, you know, hey, make your dream roller coaster, your dream theme park, whatever. This one is like try to stay alive in the fucking overcrowded and like hard to please game industry where, you know, you can dump almost everything you've got into a game that you feel like should be a sure hit, and then next thing you know, you're eating ramens.
Two other things I've been playing, which basically I've talked about before, Arma 3. They released, like, the game's about to come out in, like, less than 2 weeks, and because of that, they've just started pushing out all the stuff that they know is working and people are craving for now in a sort of, like, opt-in developer mode of the beta. So I've already been playing on the new giant map, which is, like, there's three main islands, there's two islands, and, like, the bigger island is split into like this big chunk and a little chunk. The big chunk is the same size as the largest Arma 2 map, which was Chinaris.
God. So some people are really happy about this, but people like me are like, fuck that.
Well, I mean, like, and then there's two other islands to go with this. So this thing is, it's vast.
It's huge. You probably have to use aircraft for most of it, right?
Yes and no. The thing about Arma is, where a game like Battlefield or something, like Bad Company 2, you could probably make this a good example. All the maps they've made probably equate to the size of this map, or roughly. But they designed it in, okay, this is the set piece, this is the vignette, this is what you guys are going to be fighting. Whereas the Bohemia Interactive guys just give you the giant island, and you can make whatever mission you want in whatever area you want. And you can sort of like cordon off the rest of the area.
Okay.
Right. So I've already seen like a half a dozen places in this small bit I've played of just like, man, it would be cool to have just like a fight here, like, you know, defend this hill point or attack through this city sort of thing.
Interesting. So with Arma coming out soon, what does that entail? Like, they're not adding a single player, are they?
They are not. They will be adding a lot of campaign missions, but they are not planning on doing that, like single player stuff. They will not be doing that upon release.
Right.
Basically, because they realize that the sandboxy nature of it and the community can work faster than Bohemia Interactive ever could.
Ever, yeah.
So they're releasing a very impressive tool set that is sort of like any like game making program, in that the coding is hidden. I'm trying to think of the right word for this, but like basically you make the levels through like a visual basic sense of...
Okay. Wait, so is it WYSIWYG? Like, what you see is what you get? You can just place shit wherever you want, like a Halo editor, for example? Or is it, like, more actual... Like, you said the code is hidden. Like, is there, like, drop-down menus to set, like, if-or statements? Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good example, because I haven't worked in a game editor in a long, long time. Like, the last one I worked in that this reminds me a lot of is, like, the Warcraft 3 editor. Which... Okay. Seasoned game veterans will probably remember that, but
fuck yeah, I do. I used to make maps. So Warcraft 3, you start with a map, and then
had to make a map for a class.
No, nice. I'm not talking about the map editor. I'm talking about just the ability to like have scripting and have like that sort of element of it.
Oh, okay, sure.
That's really intuitive and really good. So that's a lot of fun, and I'll try not to talk too much about that. The other game I've been playing is Guild Wars 2.
Sure.
Which we talked about last week. The one thing I hadn't had a chance to check out was the rabid pack of people zerging around a map trying to get all this loot and wealth from these meta events that is Scarlet invading zones.
Right. Okay.
And I'm going to bash this game a little bit in that those are a bad idea.
Those are a bad idea?
I do not approve of those things.
Why so?
And
good sir.
Because you have to be Johnny on the spot to get to these events because of how quickly, how many people can get into these zones and do them.
Right.
The events, like a champion goes down in seconds. And so if you're not there when like, okay, champion spawning, everyone get here, follow the commander icons or whatnot, zerg, zerg, zerg. you will be the caboose of the train and not getting any credit for any of this stuff. So there's this potential for really good loot and all that, and people are making a bank off it, preparing for the ascended weapons or ascended armor and all that to come out, like the new crafting. People are trying to stockpile like money and mats and all that. But if you're not quick enough, either you don't have the fastest gear set up or whatnot, you're always showing up as the event's wrapping up, as this meta giant like waves of guys event is wrapping up, and it can get really depressing.
So the main problem is that they're objective based instead of time based is kind of what you're saying.
Yes, there is a time element to it, but that's just like complete all these events before the time's up.
Yeah, which is even worse because that means more people will get there faster.
The objective base is kill like this champion, what they thought was this giant guy. Basically, if they tweak that so they had a bit more like bit higher health pool or something,
right,
that would probably just encourage more people to show up. But
yeah, but that's kind of fucking. I'd rather they just have like a time based like. I know wave-based survival doesn't necessarily work, but it's more cooperative and community-driven than just kill this one dude and then kill this other dude. Like, I'd prefer, yeah, of the two, I'd prefer wave-based. I just have it there.
I'm not saying, like, yeah, I'm crying a storm that I didn't get anything, but I'm not trying to make money anymore at this game. I'm just doing it to play it.
Yeah.
But there were people in the chat that were like, could we try and do this the right way instead of you guys just, like, sniping the champions and running off to the next before you finish the event.
Right.
Like, yeah. You guys are doing this to make the quick buck. Can we just do this for the fun of the event? And everyone's like, no, it's QQ more. And I was like, guys, stop. It's a video game.
Yeah.
Mommy, daddy, stop fighting.
So basically what I'm saying, folks, is get Arma 3.
Nice. Wait, so you didn't play Shelter?
No, like I said, I got it today when the sale came out.
Oh, okay.
I've since been blame my friends and blame PAX.
So like, cause
goddamn it, Thurb, stop having a life.
I'm sorry,
gotta play games.
Gotta play this those video games. For.
I'm sorry, I didn't go to PAX because I was playing video games.
Oh man, no, it seems like a really cool game. I just don't know how like compelled I'd be by it, because Shelter was played by Patrick recently on, I think it was a Worth Playing. It might have just been a fucking quick look.
It was a quick look solo.
Yeah. So it seemed kind of interesting, though I don't know how like long it would last and if it would be like, so I can't wait till more impressions come through for it.
Like I kind of feel the same way, but like unlike Gone Home, I'm okay with that because this one's only $10. Like, Gone Home, I feel that same way about, but Gone Home costs, like, $20. That's a bit much for an experience that's going to last me a couple of hours.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't care how enriching that experience might be, and like, they were talking about it on Giant Bomb, like, Jeff was saying, like, if you are the kind of person that worries about, you know, the dollar value per hour, then this game isn't for you. And I think he misses the point a lot, because I think that sometimes they forget that some of us have to budget for games. We don't just get them given to us.
Right.
So we do, you know, no matter how great the game might actually be, we do have to still look at the kind of entertainment per hour value and see if it's actually worth getting now, or, you know, maybe worth picking up later on in a Steam sale.
Especially if gaming is go ahead.
Entertainment versus time versus quality.
I think it's just a lot of it is just that they get so many games given to them, and, you know, they're also all, you know, at least Jeff in particular, you know, very stable income, no money worries, no need to budget. So they forget that, you know, for a lot of us, that is definitely still has to be a factor, even if we are able to appreciate a game for what it's worth for the experience.
That's the thing, right? Like, both me and Thurbleton would probably agree that game, even though it's kind of great, it is like a critical darling in the way that I don't think a lot of people would connect with it as much as like the critics have. Like, I just don't. I'm just saying it is not that great. It's not $20 for 3 hours. Like, great. So
yeah, like Gone Home seems like an interesting idea, and it seems like an experience I would like to have, but I'll get it for like $5 or $10 on the Steam sale, because I will still have that same experience. I will just have it later, and I'm okay with that.
Exactly, and just don't let it be spoiled for you, and then it's all good. Like that, I'd say the same thing about To the Moon. That was, even though it launched at 10, I don't know. For me, that game was like one of the best. It's on my favorite games of all time list now, but it's still like it's not a game. And Gone Home isn't a game either. So it's especially with more experimental stuff like this, I can definitely consider like people's unwillingness to just like splurge on something they're told is good, especially when quick looks of it can't really show you why it's so good. So,
well, and especially again, you know, looking at the platform, we're talking about PC here.
Yeah,
when $20 can buy you 4 games.
Yeah, or like you really have to Humble Bundle means like 20 games or some shit. It's just PC is just so. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about that to some extent. Like, I think PC is starting to have the iOS problem. Yeah, exactly. The value proposition is being all kind of fucked now. It's kind of...
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think that actually the PC is the direction that the games industry needs to go. We need to have radical pricing in games. We need to have games cost what they're worth for what they are, as opposed to, well, this is a video game, so it's $60.
But
also,
like,
you want to make sure you walk that line, because if it's almost like, well, this game is really good, I really like it. Like if Gone Home was like $15 instead of $20, I think that'd be a lot. Like people would be a lot more convinced of like, okay, it's worth getting now instead of waiting for a sale. But you don't want people to get into a mentality of like, oh, I'll just wait until it's on sale to get.
Yeah, well, and that's my problem.
That is like maybe a problem, if you can call it that, with Steam, because that it has become the mentality now with Steam is like, unless it is a day one purchase for you, generally your reaction is I'll just wait for it to go on sale for like $10 or $15, or even $20 if it's a $60 game, because I know it will at some point this year. But I think that could be considered a problem, but really when you look at it from the developer and the publisher standpoint, it's not really, because if you weren't willing to buy the game at $60, kind of as, you know, like we did with Saints Row, like day one, $60 purchase, we knew we wanted to play that game, so we went out and got it. If you're not that person, you were kind of already probably going to wait for a price drop anyway, and then at some point on any other service that is not a digital platform, you're going to forget that game even exists. So when it suddenly pops up on Steam for like $15, you can look at that and be like, oh yeah, I forgot. I wanted to play that game. $15? Yeah, I'll drop that. Yeah. And so then you pick it up. Like these are increased sales that you don't typically see on console platforms.
Well, it's kind of a weird like circling pattern, because for example, like what's his face? The guy who made Dust and Legion Tale, keep forgetting his name, but that guy, the Dust guy, was on the Friday show for Giant Bomb, and he was talking about how a bunch of indie developers are seeing just huge like income off Steam, right? Like they're just getting like huge amounts of like spikes in how much money they get, and that is frequently like directly correlated to a sale. So if you have Steam cards and you were on the summer Steam sale, you would have gotten a shitload of sales, and a lot of those developers saw that. But it's that kind of mentality, like having those prices become where most people buy those games at, kind of fucks over the people like Gone Home who are going for that slightly higher price, because it's like it is the iOS problem. iOS has the problem of everything being a dollar or free, right? And so when games come out like Chaos Rings or like things that are a bit larger experiences without Square Enix's name behind them.
XCOM is an excellent example of that.
Yeah, and they get completely dominated, even though they may be worth that money, the extra money. The expectations are being driven lower and lower. And obviously that's fine because developers are making money as well. But at some point, it is broadening the lower end of price spectrum and kind of like shoving the upper end down. But that wonderful world where we're seeing things spanning the whole spectrum from $1 or free to $60 is being marginalized in a different direction now. Obviously, for the consumer, it's fine, because for us, we want to be spending like, well, next to nothing on games. But for the developer who wants to put out a game that's $30, $20, $40, they're being further and further marginalized. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily.
I don't feel like that's the case. I feel like if the quality is there and the marketing is there, then the game will still sell. I mean, the reason Gone Home, a lot of people are looking at that and kind of second guessing whether or not they're willing to spend that is like, yes, it's $20, but like when it comes out before the game has even been released, that it's like a 3-hour experience and it's not really a game. It's more of like an exploration.
Yeah.
Like those are like, the reasons why a lot of people can't justify the cost. It's not because, oh, well, you know, $20 for this or $10 for, you know, Papers, Please or something. Like it's that there's not enough game there to justify it. And so I don't think that that's really a larger problem.
No, I mean, like, not for Gone Home.
Payday 2 just came out. That's like $30. Yeah. Natural Selection 2 was 25. I think it was 30. Right now it's on sale for like $6.50 or something.
$6.79.
Yeah. Actually.
But the crazy thing about those is they're both multiplayer-driven games. And I think the world is ready for multiplayer-only experiences in that price point. Like everyone's really ready for that. Because everyone's been saying for ages, Call of Duty, stop freaking putting in a single player and just start releasing it for $40 and you'll get more people.
Or, I mean, like, Titanfall is doing a really cool thing of, like, having the campaign, but in a multiplayer sense.
Yeah, and
I'm super excited for that game, you guys.
I'm not at all, but at the same time...
I hear campaign cool. And multiplayer experience, like, all I can think of is Brink.
Left 4 Dead, man. That's kind of what they're going for. That they specifically cited Left 4 Dead. Which could be good. I don't know. We'll wait till that game comes out. It's getting huge amounts of buzz, and it seemed pretty cool, and it runs at 60 frames per second, so it sounds interesting.
I'm excited more for the people behind it than the game itself. Like, the game looks really cool, don't get me wrong, but it's, like, Modern Warfare 1 was a really cool game that has since been, just remade over and over going into the ground, but...
Right.
Yeah.
This is those guys, right? So, anyway...
Yeah, these are guys from Infinity Ward who since got like quit when two people got like fired for no, like just in a terrible term, and they're like, "Screw you guys, Activision."
Yeah, but just aside from the business stuff, this is essentially the core of the Modern Warfare 1 team that's making this game. But I'm excited for it because it's sci-fi, and I would like more sci-fi in my media just in general. So I'm pretty happy with that. If this spawns off like a new generation of shit like Mass Effect. Like working with this kind of like, because Mass Effect was based off the third person shooter, right? Imagine a Mass Effect game or a Star Trek game that's based off this, like freaking fast moving, like story driven experience with like shitloads of shooting with mechs and shit. That I would love. And so I hope this spawns off like a new direction for games. But either way, we've stumbled off topic from what we've been playing, even though it was a fun little discussion to have. I think like the book on game pricing has yet to be closed, and the cool thing about living in this era with this medium is that shit's still changing. I think people are citing for like this is like the 70s of movies, but for games, because everything's changing right now, which is kind of awesome. Anything else you've been playing, Thurbleton? Or is that it? Are we done?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Have you done anything in your life? Reading? Did you go to? You didn't go to. You're going to PAX on Monday, right?
Yes. Two days from now.
2 days from now. Oh. All right. Cool. Well, we'll hear about that next week. Durin. Actually, wait. Durin, give me a preview of what you're going to talk about, because I'm going to decide who's going to go first, you or me.
Like, we are trying to make this a short show because someone wants to talk about Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
I think you know what I want to talk about.
Okay. All right.
I did play at least one other game, but...
Well, just give me a preview. What's that other game?
Saints Row 4.
All right. Okay. All right. We'll do you last, then we head to the topic, so you can be the shortest of the three.
God damn it.
Yep. That's what you. Hey man, you got a 2.5 hour special. That's all you're getting from me in terms of special treatment. And anyway, so for me, going back to Gone Home, I sat down and made my friend play it for a short period of time, and that made me realize that I am sick of running games at lower than max settings. So I went out and got a GDX 660 Ti.
Oh, okay.
And
like, why did you not have it running at lower, like at not max settings?
Exactly, because I was on an NVIDIA GDX 260 that lasted me since the moment I got this PC until last week. Because like my base point of quality is if I have to run like low-end games, like indie games, at less than max settings, and then it's time for an upgrade. And that didn't happen until this year. So that card lasted me like 5 years. I'm really happy with that. But yeah, so I finally up to 660 GT, or GTX 660 Ti, freaking NVIDIA. And I'm so happy with it. It's a good purchase. So I ended up like getting by various means other games just to like put them in, see what I can run them on, and then delete them. So I ran Crysis 3, and that first level fucking destroys my card, because if you well know, Crysis 3 starts off in like a like rainy setting on the ship, and there's heat, and it's dark, so there's lots of like lighting and all that kind of effects. So 60 Ti could run that at high on everything at native resolution, which is 1920 by 1200, and VSync off. So that, I was pretty impressed by that. So it did pretty good job. 60 frames a second. It was nice. Then I did Tomb Raider, and the weird thing about Tomb Raider is...
Did you turn on Trace Effects?
That's the weird thing, because if I turned on Trace Effects... So first of all, they have two high-end settings. There's Ultra, and then there's Ultimate. And the only difference between the two is whether Trace Effects is enabled. So,
yep.
When I enabled the ultimate experience, I got like between 30 and 45 frames a second. And I don't mind that too much. Yeah, exactly. I don't mind that too much, because 30 frames a second is kind of where I like games to run at.
Well, I mean, like, I think I was playing it at like 25 on the 560 Ti.
But the problem with it was like it freaking fluctuated like crazy. So at some moments when her hair wasn't doing anything, it would be running at the 45 to sometimes even 60, and if I move a little.
It seems like it's based on how close the camera is to your hair. The closer it is to the hair, the lower your frame rate is going to be.
Yeah, so like when I did the opening cinematic where she's like in the water and the hair gets wet and it does a close up, it went down to like 5 frames a second for like a quarter of a second, and then went back up to 60 the next shot, and that was just like, that breaks games. I don't really care about what solid frame rate you're running at, as long as it's solid. If it's fluctuating, I can't take it. It makes me sick. So turn off Trace Effects, and that game runs at ultra settings, native resolution. I really like this card, is kind of what I'm saying. What else did I throw in? Oh, I finally... So I deleted those games, because obviously piracy is bad. And then it finally got XCOM. And I own XCOM, so yeah, whatever. But
okay, so I put that... Just to be clear here, you told me about this game. Enemy Unknown?
Enemy Unknown, yeah. XCOM, okay, motherfucker, okay. Enemy Unknown. See, I
thought, you said that XCOM game, I assumed you meant the new one.
No, not Declassified.
Okay.
Actually, that's a good point. Let's not speak of Declassified. Let's just say that. I know.
Do you plan on getting the newest one, the Enemy Within?
So, we've discussed XCOM before in the show, and I've previously come on here and said quite specifically that I don't think it's as good as Valkyria Chronicles, so I closed that game and uninstalled it. You know what? It's still not as good as Valkyria Chronicles, but the economy part of that game is ridiculously compelling. And my main problem was that I only played the demo back when we first talked about XCOM, and that was janky as fuck. Like, the subtitles were all weird, and they're still weird, so I just disabled them now. The camera angles were all janky, and like when like the animations for firing, especially when you're like when and people were leaning around corners and shit, like your gun wouldn't be pointing at the enemy, you'd just be like firing off into space and you'd still be hitting them. Like, it did weird shit like that in the demo. When I installed like this new version of PC and it's running at 60 frames on my graphics card, it looks smooth. They fixed that animation jankiness and it runs real nice. So like I totally maxed out on a native just as I'd want it to be. And it is fun. Like, it is pretty fun. So I just spent like this morning, I drew out like a map of my base and planned out where I'm going to build stuff later. Like, it's that kind of game where I'm getting like deep into the nitty gritty. Like, if I put 3 satellite uplinks in a kind of like L-shaped fashion and put a satellite nexus in the middle. I get 14 satellites, which is two less than I need to have to cover the whole world. But that allow me to like leave South America uncovered so that I can farm like UFO abductions, because UFO abductions only really happen to a large extent in places that don't have satellites over them. So I can cover the whole world except South America because their bonus is shit. And then I can have like a satellite uplink on standby next to the others, which will give me three satellites more. And that will allow me to, if South America goes out of control and sick abductions, I can launch two satellites there and have one on standby in case another one gets shut down. Like, shit like that is what I'm really enjoying about XCOM. Just stupid.
What you're saying is XCOM is actually a good game, then?
XCOM is a before I said it just wasn't for me. I don't think I called it bad, except for the animations and shit. But they fixed that stuff. So, like, that was like
clearly you were wrong about that when you were drawing out maps.
The as soon as I saw that they'd fixed all the animation bullshit with the demo in the actual game, I gave it a chance, and when I gave it a chance, it's hooked on me. And so, like, I'm totally there. I'm, like, a third through the game, I think. I just finished the alien base, and I've just unlocked side units, but I haven't gotten any side units yet. Like, so I'm getting there. Is that, like, that's, like, less than halfway through, right? Or is that close to the end? I don't know. I have no idea anymore.
I don't know. It's. I think you're a little bit further than I am.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Far into the game.
I've only been playing it for, like, a day.
Yeah, like, I think I played like two nights and then I never went back to it because it was just too damn stressful.
It is real stressful. Like if you're not on top of your satellites and putting them up where you need to put them up and doing as many missions in very specific areas as you can and like keeping on top of that shit. And it helps that I'm playing on a normal. Like I'm not playing it on a ridiculous difficulty which ups everything. Because the higher difficulties not only make the enemies harder, but they make the panic levels higher and all that shit. So I'm like, fuck that. So it's been pretty good. And so like that's my little adventure of returning to PC gaming to some extent and getting an actual video card. The sad side effect is that old games that I played before at 30 frames because of my old card now look weird to me rather than just better. Like I had this discussion with Shinboy and he's like, isn't it amazing to play games at 60 frames? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, the games I was used to playing at 30, that's how the game looked to me. It looks more cinematic because it's at lower frame rate, more like a movie, and 24 frames is what the movies run at. So, like, Mass Effect looked a specific way running on my computer. So when I go back to it with this new card and I launch 3 for a bit, it just looks too smooth and, like, it sounds weird, but too good. So it's just like, I just don't know how I feel, but yeah, new games are cool. Like games I haven't experienced yet are pretty fine. I'm pretty happy to running at 60. I'm not a 60 frames per second guy. It's just like a performance parameter to me, so I'll never be Shinboy. But it's cool. Aside from that, see, I've been reading Raven Shadow, which is a book I found on Amazon, which is like a stupidly high user approval rating. It's been okay, so I'm not willing to recommend it yet. And I've installed Dear Esther after your guys' recommendations, and I've yet to play it, but it seems cool.
Just want to make sure that wasn't my recommendation, was it?
I'm not sure. It was when we were talking about Gone Home, someone kept talking about Dear Esther.
Who here has given a positive recommendation for that game? I didn't say game.
It seems interesting, but I keep falling asleep every time I try to actually play through it.
Okay, let me put it this way. I'm all for playing that game or loading up that program.
Yep.
Just make sure you have the sound down and are listening to something else.
Ooh.
Why?
I like the music. Well, from the title screen, the music seems okay.
Do you not like the narrator?
Actually, no. The story is good. It's just that game needs like a sprint button or something.
And maybe a scope.
I think it was in the context.
Scope. You walk so freaking slow, and if you take the wrong turn and go to a dead end, you walk that whole way back with just like nothing. Just boredom.
That's pretty funny. That's just boredom.
Okay. No, yeah. Here's what you do. You get that game, but uh-huh. Look to see if someone has made a speed hack for it.
Oh, man. Or like a map. Just like, this is where you need to go. You just go. Just follow this
route. No. You don't need a map. Just like, wander as much as you can, because it's not that hard to get, like, you can obviously tell, like, this has been a dead end and not to go this way. It's not some, like, open world majesty. It's a fairly linear game. It's just all you can do is walk. Like,
oh, I thought it was open world. I don't know where I got that impression, but I thought it was, like, you go around this island and it was open
world. You do go around an island.
Right, but it's, like, directed experience. You go to specific places in a specific
area. Oh, hell yeah, is it directed?
Okay, all right. No, I think it wasn't in the context of it being a good game. It was like, hey, Cynic, you seem to like cinematic experiences. Try this out. So
actually, like, no, Cynic, you like super dark and depressing experiences. You will like Dear Esther.
Man, you know what?
And you like good writing. What? Exactly. Come at me.
No, I don't. I can't deny that I like dark experiences anymore. When I was younger, I used to like just bright, happy stuff. But then, I don't know, like at some point, Requiem for a Dream became my favorite movie of all time, and it just went downhill from there. But I don't like just like gruesome shit, but I like stuff that's complex and dark, and I don't know, maybe this is something about myself. Anyway, that's all I've been doing. Probably talk about more of that, about that book once I finish it, but until then, oh god, Durin.
What's up? So, all right. So, I played some Dive Kick.
Oh, did you? We talked about Dive Kick last week.
I did.
Yeah, I'd love to get your opinion of our match and any other matches you've done with like people you actually know from your setup. Or, like, because I gave my 2 cents.
Well, our match is the only one I've played against somebody I know. The rest has been unranked online. I feel like I need to learn the characters better before I jump into the ranked ring.
That, ladies and gentlemen, that tells the story of a person who cares about their rank opposed to me.
Blizzard, any Blizzard player.
That tells the story of somebody who has played StarCraft 2.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, Durin, I may or may not be like throwing matches when I don't like the person I'm fighting against.
In fact, that is exactly what he's doing. He told me he did it.
Jesus.
He just goes YOLO Gem and fucks it. Yeah.
The game, I take that back. I did play a few rounds against my wife as well. And she nearly beat me. So that game is really cool because it's a fighting game that you don't need to actually have any knowledge of fighting games to enjoy.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually think it helps that if you come into that game without much fighting game experience, I think it's even more fun because it's like a new thing. Yeah. Or like it's like a doorway.
Like counting frames of animation and exactly. All that. Dealing with zoning and all that bullshit, like you're just trying to figure out how this jump angle actually works,
mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun. You know the dialogue that the characters say when they die is fucking great.
sometimes it's
probably one of the best characters because when you select him, he says West Philadelphia, born and raised.
That spoke to you on a deep level.
It did. I don't know I really don't know how to feel about the fact that it seems like my best character right now is Mr. N.
Mr. N's pretty good, yo. I had some real success with Mr. N.
The last thing I will say about, because there's not much to really say about Dive Kick. It's a great game. You should go out. The netcode is really good. I did play some online. No lag problems whatsoever.
Cool.
I do wish that. And I think you can mute the other players before you have to go into the match. But I wish it wasn't open mic.
I heard that's real bad.
I don't want to listen to the guy talk to like his friend on Skype while we're playing. And it's just, yeah.
That may or may not be when I turn on YOLO Gem.
Just wants to get it over with.
But
that is funny because like, They rise out of the stupor of, like, you'll hear them audibly say, like, oh, shit, YOLO Gem, what the heck's this guy doing?
Wait, have you ever won yet on YOLO Gem?
No, but I actually, I've won a choke match.
Nice.
Oh, wow. It might have been with the YOLO Gem.
Nice. That's pretty good. That feels nice.
It was such the best feeling ever.
Yeah.
So folks who don't know what a choke warning is, it's first one of five. So it's best 9 out of 10 or whatever. If you go 4-0, so like you are about to lose the next match, a fraud detection warning happens. And if you go 5-0, you are considered a fraud for having lost.
Yes.
But if you turn around and win the next four, it is a choke detection warning in that that person was about to win and is about to choke.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sad it doesn't give you anything for that. But yeah, it's just totally...
Yeah, like this would be like a counter, like wins, losses, choke matches won.
Or like hustler. They should that just, would be great. If you're just hustling other dude, that would be good.
Something. But no, the last thing I want to say about Dive Kick is fuck the Baz.
I didn't have any problem. Especially if you play Kick. I don't know how you're having this problem. Oh, you main Mr.
I don't
N?
Play Kick. I play Mr. N.
Oh, so you don't really play Kick. You just main Mr. N. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife played Kick, and that's where we heard it. But I pretty much am maining Mr. N right now because he seems the most – I don't know if he is, but he seems like he's the most all around. And his full meter is ridiculous because his kick is ridiculously fast. And I like his ability to just run away.
No, I would say his especially against the Baz, I would say his ability to hover slightly for a few seconds in the air would be advantageous to baiting Mr. Baz.
Wait, how does he hover?
His twinkle powers. Are you sure you're playing Mr. N? Are you sure you're playing Mr. N? His air special is to hover.
Wait, neck. Oh, well.
Again, ladies and gentlemen. What am I saying? Gentlemen, this is a two-button game. Two buttons, and there are still moves that Durin does not know.
You only have five moves to learn.
I need to go play more Dive Kick.
Video games.
Oh, man. Yeah, my Mr. N, when you're mixing up with that hover, is pretty hard to beat.
Okay, I said that was the last thing I wanted to say, but I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
I forget what his name is, but Seth Killian's character.
S-Kill.
Okay. How the fuck do you play that guy? He just... I never know where he's coming out of his health.
He's really good against Baz as well.
You need to play cross-handed.
Nice. Okay. Nice. No, it's pretty... He's actually pretty easy. Just play as him for a while and you'll learn him. Like, but
yeah,
no,
it's just learning because like, it's the same as any other jump. You just disappear during it. So it's just...
Because No, it's not quite. Because like, he has... It's three button presses to do anything. The last one has to be a kick to come out as a kick. Yep. So if you just hit, like, if you just do hit dive then kick, he'll do nothing. He'll teleport backwards. So like, you know how when you're on the ground and you hit kick, you go back.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that for S kill. So if you go, for example, kick, kick, dive, you'll go back, back, up. So if you go kick, kick,
you can go like kick, kick, dive. You could do like kick, kick, dive, kick, and you would go back, back.
Well, no, it's still three. Kick? It's still three. And anything after the third, he just falls straight to the ground. So, for example, if you go kick, 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 he'll go back twice and then kick. So he'll come down at almost the exactly same spot as he left the ground on. If you just want to go forward, you go dive, dive, kick, and he goes as high as he can and then goes forward. If you want to go a little bit shorter distance, then it's dive, kick, kick. And so he only goes a little bit, and then he kicks forward, and so on and so forth. So it's like other permutations of that. If you end on a kick, you go forward and kick. If you end on a dive, then he just jumps,
guys,
and teleports.
There is a stupid amount of depth to this game.
But not enough. And that's kind of the weird thing is me and...
No, that's the thing. There is enough.
Well, yeah, they achieve what they set out to achieve, which is, very particularly, like, they decided on this amount of complexity and they hit that pretty much perfectly. But from people like me who learn Street Fighter characters, frame count, learn matchups, that kind of stuff, it's a bit too simple. And it's not... What I'm saying is Lethal League is a better game. I'm sorry, guys. Like, have you guys played Lethal League yet? They played it on Professional Fridays once. It's this game where it's like a yellow background and kind of. It's like a yellow background and it's like this beady, this bassy or beady kind of like hip-hop music. And all it is like two stick figures and a ball in the middle. So you each have a bat. And the only buttons are to run around, so WSD, and swing the bat. And I think the other one is to angle the ball, right? So That's essentially it. So essentially it's swinging bat, angle the ball, and then movement. So it's kind of a two button, but it's not. So with that, the only way to hurt the other guy is to hit him with the ball, or for the ball to hit him in general. So the entire point of it is to, you guys both have bats.
That one.
Yeah, you hit the ball at each other. And as you hit the ball, it accelerates. And if you redirect it whilst in the air, it doubles its speed. So my friends played it. And essentially, they got to the ball going at like 220 miles an hour. So just this like solid line on the screen. And then from there, it would just be them trying to dodge the ball. And whoever gets hit by it first loses. It kind of gets like that kind of thing. It's very...
Yeah.
It's very mind-gamey. It is like very simple. But because the depth comes from learning angles, learning geometry, like getting used to the speed you're working at, they play that for hours and hours and hours without getting bored. Whereas when we played Dive Kick, we got bored with it. So anyway.
Well, okay. You know what? If we're going to be bringing other fighting games in that we consider superior, I mean, nothing really tops Dong Dong Never Die.
So how is Saints Row 4, speaking of dongs?
Speaking of dongs, yes.
Yeah.
Saints Row 4 is... I imagine Thurbleton talked about it a bit last week, right? Or did that come out this week?
Yeah, he talked about it last week.
Yeah, I talked about it last week. We talked about it.
If
we're going to talk about fighting games, I would say Super Pole Fighters is the best one, but whatever. Saints Row, talk about it.
Indeed.
I won't go real deep into it then because you guys did talk about it last week, but Thurbleton and I did play a bit of it together, and... So I listened to the Bombcast recently, and I think I pretty much kind of agree with a lot of what they were saying there, in that, like, this is a really great game. I'm really, like, surprised how much I cared about being able to bring my guy back into the game and how much it makes the game feel that much better for it.
Right.
Like, there could be no other leader of the Saints than my guy.
Of course.
Like,
which voice
is weird. Like, it's very Mass Effect-y in that way. Like, I don't know.
Is it Cockney guy? Are you Cockney guy?
No. I stuck with default.
That's Troy Baker, right? Yeah.
Actually, Durin.
I was going to go with Nolan North, and I was like, no, I can't. Like, that's...
You can't change the voice.
My guy has a voice.
Yeah, like, that is not the voice of the Saints from the past few games. I get that.
Yeah.
I sort of did a similar thing where when I played with you, that was the normal voice I kept for my character. But during the intro, I tried going with the Cockney voice, and it was entertaining, but it didn't last.
I think that would be the problem for me with like Nolan North. Like, it would be entertaining knowing that this is Nolan North.
Yeah,
but it wouldn't be the same character. It would be it would be a farce.
Yeah,
I didn't have the problems that Brad and Jeff talked about importing my character in. Nor did I have the problems Benny did. Like, my character came in, all the clothing came in. He was exactly the way I left off in the last game.
Mm.
So I don't know if it was because maybe they were playing like pre-release, like maybe before the service.
Something weird. Mass Effect had the same thing where some people didn't have problems. Like, I had to recreate my dude, and most people could just import it in. Like, it's just one of those weird things with character creators.
I imported mine in Mass Effect, but, like, I had to make a couple changes because, like, his hair color wasn't right.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little off or something. But, yeah.
Yeah.
This game, everything came over just fine. I think after Thurbleton pointed it out, my character's eyes might be a little more psychotic than I remember them being.
I don't want to point that out, but
I'm gonna just roll with it because he's a leader of the Saints.
Well, he's the president now, and that comes with some element of psychosis.
And he always wears sunglasses, so I probably had them like that originally. I just don't know because it's been so long since I made
nice.
Him.
Sure,
I did figure out though. Like, I have to be careful not to mess with that character too much because I don't know if this is like kind of across the board or what. But like, I can't change his sunglasses because if I do, I'll never get them back. Because those sunglasses are not in Saints Row 4.
Oh, no. Oh, they didn't carry over everything? That's weird.
No, like, they carried over on my character. So, like,
yeah,
they're
not,
there
like, in your inventory.
But, yeah, like, I can't buy those sunglasses.
Man. So anyway, how's the game? And then let's move on to the next game.
It's really good. I'm enjoying it. I think they did a better job with the side missions than they did in the past, but I don't think they did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
They're fairly boring. Unfortunately for me, I haven't gotten super far in, so I can't speak for a lot of the side missions, I guess, or a lot of the missions you do with different characters. But Keith David's are really boring. Like, it's mostly the delivery. Like, the quests themselves or the missions themselves aren't terrible, but it's like every one of them, they remind me of like old episodes of Beavis and Butthead. or something where the like they
have taste.
he contacts you and he's, and the whole mission is just remember that time when this and this happened.
That sounds like, hilarious.
Okay. But there's three types of missions.
Time.
There's the priority missions. There's the side missions, and there's the main side missions, which are to say, recruit homies or something and do loyalty missions for them. Actually, I think the recruiting homies might actually be the like getting your crew together.
Right.
Those are more the main mission. There's loyalty missions, which are a lot of fun and have a lot more cutscene-y stuff and dialogue between the two characters.
Yeah, I haven't seen that stuff yet.
Yeah, you will enjoy that, and that's pretty much the point I'm at. I'm waiting at for you to stop playing the other game and catch up to me at Saints Row. But the side missions are really just a glorified way of saying, hey, we got all these mini games in the map world. You should do all those. And what's really cool is if you do just the side missions, you'll do each of those mini games in order and all that. Or if you have already just gone around the map and started doing all those side missions, you'll already have it completed on like the thing. So you'll miss out on some dialogue.
Yeah.
But you'll get the XP done really quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, like, so I'm having fun in the game. It's a lot of fun to move around in that world, like, you know, flying around and dive bombing and stuff. And like, it is a lot of fun, but I think that after this game, I'm totally okay with Volition moving on from Saints Row because I feel like this game is barely a Saints Row game anymore.
Well, and it's also, like, They've been sort of bound by having to recreate the Saints Row vibe over and over again. And we've seen, like, I think we can all agree that what comes out of that studio is some pretty inventive and creative stuff. Wouldn't it be amazing to see something inventive and creative for them that isn't bound by Saints Row and has, you know, some crazy inventive design?
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen them make a game that isn't bound by, you know, video game rules. So let's just see them do it in a fresh way now.
You know what? Sure. I don't know whether I'll ever really warm to their brand of humor, but they seem like they know how to make a superhero game, and I wouldn't mind them take that on. Like I wouldn't mind like a freaking Volition. Who'd be a good superhero for Volition if they were to be given a
Volition
superhero?
Might actually be able to pull off like a
Deadpool.
You know what would be a great one? It's unfortunate that one was just made and was really bad, but like. What is his name?
Deadpool
would be perfect for Volition.
Exactly.
They could actually pull off Deadpool humor. That's basically, Deadpool humor is what Saints Row is.
Exactly, like how we'd want it to be rather than how it was executed in the game. Like, it's exactly right, yeah. Or if it was someone who could fly? I bet Volition could make a really good Hulk game, which is weird because I think they did make a Hulk game. Did they make a Hulk game? I'm trying to.
No, you're thinking of the people who made Prototype worked on Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
Right. Yeah.
That's actually where the Prototype tech came from.
Man, they could probably make a good Hulk game. I don't know. Anyway, so in general, like, do you guys think Saints Row, now that you're at where you are now, Saints Row the Third versus Saints Row 4 fight?
Oh, the third. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
the problem is it's hard to top that game because it was so ridiculous and over the top, even, you know, especially compared to the previous game. Like this is the one where they took it in a whole different direction than what GTA was ever trying to do and made it their own. So with 4, I think a combination of them basically kind of doing that again but trying to one up it, combined with them not spending the time to actually create a whole new world and everything just literally being the exact same thing, just kind of diminishes the game overall. Like, it's still a really good game, but it's just not even comparable to 3.
Hmm. Cool. I'm trying to stall before you get to Final Fantasy. All right. Okay. All right. So
not even comparable.
Just get to it.
Let's just do Final Fantasy. We have a user email regarding Final Fantasy, which I'll do before. Durin does his little thing, but I don't know what name he wants to go by because he signed off as Lism, but he has a full name attached to his email address, so I'm just gonna call him Lism, just in case.
Probably.
But Yeah, Liz, let me know that guys from Australia, if you are having ping problems with Final Fantasy, and I didn't, like when me and Duran talked about it a couple weeks ago, I actually had a pretty buttery smooth experience, but now that server is alive, it might be a little bit different. But there's apparently, I'm just going to read it verbatim. See, you spent a good amount of time figuring out which server to play on. After some research, mainly from Oceania.guildwork.com, I found out there's essentially an unofficial Oceanic servers, two are from the JP data center and two from the NA data center. On both set of data centers, there is one Oceanic server for legacy characters and another for new characters. So if you're from Australia, etc., like New Zealand, whatever, people who are from Oceania know what that is. We apparently have servers. Like, say if you're having problems in the EU or... like just in general with EU data centers, you can pick up these servers and JP and NA. So the JP data centers are Masamune for legacy characters and Tonberry for non-legacy characters, which I love these names.
I believe Masamune is actually where my legacy character is located. Cool.
And that's the unofficial Australian and et cetera server as well. And North American data center, there is Sargantanis?
Oh, really? Sargantanis, yeah, that's the one I'm playing on, actually.
Yeah, that's where the unofficial Australian legacy North American one is, and Behemoth is where our non-legacy Australian guys are playing. So, and so just to give,
I'm going to be playing with Aussies.
Yeah, which is cool because Aussies rock. Yeah, and and you know, aside from that,
because every major MMO that I've been a part of, like a community guild in,
right,
there have always been Aussies.
That's cool. Yay.
And they're easily some of the guys I get along with the best in the guilds. I agree.
The least reverential, except for maybe the Irish. I don't know. I think it's just like
the thing I've learned about Aussies is I think you're a bit of an exception. But to get along with an Aussie, you need to be okay with language.
Oh, yeah, I don't swear as much as others.
We had some problems with that in one of my early WoW guilds. A couple of Aussie guys spoke a little too loosely for some of the older people, and they wanted none of it.
Yeah. Well, I try to dial that back. Like, I use the F word, the bad F word, not the fuck one. Often, and that is sometimes too far, especially when used. Well, I use it around noobs specifically, but I can't really help it. No, you're right. But in general, I like playing. Like, if I had to pick people I like playing with the most online, it would probably be the Brits, the Germans, and other Australians. Like, sorry to you, American guys, but and there's something about those three nations that I just kind of get along with.
Americans are assholes. I mean, what can I say?
Well, there's just too many different. Like, you're the most populist. Like. In like MMO terms, you're the humans of MMOs, right? You're the disinteresting populace where some of them are cool, but other ones are lame and whatever. And I'd say the Germans are like, well, I'm not going to go into like racial stereotypes of engineers and so on and so forth. Let's leave that alone. But just to finish off the email,
let's talk about video games.
Yeah, just to finish off the email, 120ms is his ping to the Japanese servers, which is pretty good for Australian guys, especially for overseas servers, and 300 to North American. And I think 300 North American is probably normal, and that's why I was feeling relatively smooth when I played it on other whatever North American server I ended up during the beta. So, yeah, just information out there. So that is, to repeat, Masamune, Tonberry, Sargantanis, and Behemoth.
Sargantanis?
I guess we're going on PSAs. Duran, I believe you know the location of both the Giant Bomb server and the Penny Arcade server?
Yeah, the Giant Bomb Guild. They have legacy and non-legacy for the people who want it on one side or the other. So the Giant Bomb legacy server is Sargantanis, which is the server I'm on.
Okay, cool.
And the Giant Bomb non-legacy is Ultros.
All right.
And then the Penny Arcade server, they didn't go legacy and non. Everyone just all kind of joined up on one server, and they're on Sargantanis.
And yeah, so like just for people to know, you don't need a legacy character to play on those servers. It's just that's where people have opted for them to be. Yeah. So if you want to just play with the GB guys.
Legacy servers were essentially there for, like, legacy characters will be on those servers and for the time being can't be moved off those servers.
Right.
But anybody can make a character on a legacy server.
Yeah. So if you want to play with GB, that's Sagittanus, Sagittanus or whatever. I can't say this word.
If you're going to play with Giant Bomb, I would probably recommend Ultros because it seems like that's really? Where the larger guild is.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, the legacy group is mostly like the real legacy players, like the ones that actually came over from 1.0 and they want to play their
Durin,
still.
Like that asshole. God.
No, actually, I'm playing with the Panini Arcade guild on this one.
Oh, I thought you were on Sargentanus. Okay.
Yeah, Sargentanus.
They're both on Sargentanus.
Sargentanus is the legacy one for PA, for Giant Bomb.
For Giant Bomb.
But it's where the entire PA guild is. Right. And the reason why I went with the Panini Arcade guild to be completely honest is up until like the day before early access started, the Giant Bomb guild seemed like they were kind of in a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they've gotten things back together now, but it didn't breed much confidence in me, and I've dealt with enough community guilds that fell apart months after launch that I didn't want to do that again with this game. So I decided to go the place where things seemed more stable. There were people that I knew from 1.0 that I played with in 1.0 in the Panini Arcade Guild, so there are people I know will stick around. It's kind of the same reason why I joined Linkin Force in the first place, which was that a lot of you guys came from Guild Wars 1, so I knew that this wasn't going to be a guild that was just going to completely disintegrate in a few months. There were definitely guys that were heavily invested in Guild Wars prior even to this game.
For people who are wondering, like, the Linkin Force is still together. They're still accepting memberships. I'm not a leader there anymore. I'm just a normal user there. But, yeah, it's totally... still a guild if you want to play with us in Guild Wars 2. But anyway, so Durin, I'm going to use the Noobarama thing here in that I'm looking at the time in our recording clock. It's at 1:11. You have 5 minutes to talk about Final Fantasy 14.
I want to say the Penny Arcade Free Company, which is their version of guilds, has probably the best name. It's dumb, but it's great. There are things in the game called link shells. They used to be guilds, but they're basically now like essentially like private chat channels. Mm-hmm. So the name of our free company is naturally Ghost in a Link Shell.
Mm-hmm. Great, that's pretty good. I like that. That's pretty fun.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah. You said you had a different experience to Brad. So
yeah, okay. So we'll start there. So Brad was talking about in the Giant Bombcast that he had a huge problem with even just logging into the game, finding out what his user ID was, that it was some kind of hashed thing from another nickname.
That didn't happen to me.
I don't know what his problem was because I didn't have that problem at all.
I think specifically because they do that thing where on Square Enix – actually, this one can for the 5 minutes. Let's just settle this straight up. So you do need two Square Enix accounts. There's the stupid Square Enix one, and then there's like the Square Enix, like, what they call it. It's like user services or something like that. It's like the one where you actually deal with your licenses, and those are separated. Yeah. So I think it might be the forums account. So the forums account and the actual licenses accounts are separated, but they're somewhat linked because the same email address counts for both. For me, the weird thing I had was the passwords don't reset across both. So when I forgot the password on one, the other one stayed the old password, so I had to reset it again over there. But aside from that, everything else is kind of linked. So Titus Lives, which is my amazing, I'm so happy I got it, Square Enix account name. Oh, man, Final Fantasy X is the best.
You feel bad for that, right?
No, I feel so happy. God damn it. Continuing my penchant for stupid names. So Titus Lives exists across both. But the password for the game was like not, I don't remember which one it was. It was like not the one I expected it to be. But once I figured out, it worked. I think for Brad, his problem was because he was saying he had an existing account. So it may have been hashed because someone else created like the same username. So they had to differentiate the two. Of. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's essentially it. But something like, it works out fine. Yeah. Like you just make your stupid two accounts and work.
Granted, I will agree with him. Their website's kind of fucked.
Looks like it's made a little early 2000s.
It's a little awkward getting around it. Like my friend of mine actually just straight up bookmarked the login website.
Yeah.
Just because it's a bit to actually try to find it.
I kept it in a text file. Kind of sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. So that part kind of sucks. But like, the game itself. So there were definitely some launch issues, and they talked about this again on the Giant Bombcast. And it was refreshing to hear Jeff, who is very critical of MMOs in almost every instance.
Except for PSO.
It's not, well, PSO is not an MMO. But anyway,
yeah.
that's no more an MMO than Guild Wars 1 was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to hear Jeff forgiving, you know, launch woes. Like, a lot of people were up in arms about it, and like, this is ridiculous, you know. And he said the same thing that a lot of people said, but, you know, in a much less hateful way, in that, like, yes, it's dumb that we still have launch issues with online games. This should have been fixed by now. Mm-hmm. But it does happen with every game. And yeah. Like, there were websites, I believe it was like Kotaku and like one other one, that like did no reporting on this game whatsoever leading up to release.
And then just as soon banged as on it because it had early access stuff.
Immediately, yeah. Like, oh my god, this game is doomed. The game destined to fail is already failing. The servers aren't playable. What does it say for the future of this game? And like, the comments were great. Like, as bad as the comments usually are in Kotaku, the comments were basically just like, you know, a lot of it was asking for coverage. Like, you know, you guys never cover anything, and then this is what you decide to cover. Like, how about you guys actually cover the game?
Yeah.
Before just immediately dogpiling on it.
But then who the fuck goes to Kotaku for their editorial? Like, if they're a news churn site, so they just pick off the biggest headlines and go for it. And to also, be honest, like,
this is what they make.
Yeah, if you want to go to a website for good MMO news, go to like Massively or something.
Yeah, Massively is where to go.
Even MMO Champion is a pretty okay place, because even though they focus on WoW, any major big MMO releases or even just news does show up on there as well. So it's a decent place too. But yeah, Massively is probably the best.
I will say, like, Massively has a track record of my favorite writers at Massively suddenly disappearing because they end up being hired by the MMO companies they write about. Like, it's this weird thing where they're good, but like, I don't know what it's with, like, what's like, with Massively in that they might be too good, or they're just like, no one wants to work there, so they just end up jumping ship at first opportunity. I have no idea, but yeah. The writing's
good.
You
know what? If the chance presents itself, I will ask Elizabeth Clare, who was a former writer at Massively and now a community manager for ArenaNet.
Uh-huh. Who else was that? Ruby was also Massively, wasn't she?
Ruby was as well, yeah.
Yep. So, yep. God damn it. And the guy with the big beard was Massively, and he went to, I think he went to like the one starting with R. What's the MMO starting with R? I've forgotten.
Escape.
No,
yeah, RuneScape is the online. That is an MMO. It's
the only MMO I know that starts with an R.
It might be. It might not start with an R. It's the one that's all action-y that came out like just before Guild Wars 2 came out.
Defiance?
Like, Terra? Whatever. Rift? Who cares? Rift. That's the one.
Yeah.
There we go. I think he works with Rift guys. World. I'm not sure. Yeah, but I'm not sure. Don't take my name. Yeah. Exactly.
Moving on.
He probably doesn't have a job.
Well, I don't know if that was it. Anyway, yeah, so...
Anyway.
Servers weren't as bad as they seem to be.
Yeah, servers not great at launch. They seem they're better now. Like, today was the first day that I actually came home from work, turned on the game, and got immediately into it.
Yeah. So for anyone who skipped forward 5 minutes, it's actually already been 5 minutes. And for those who don't know, we were talking about the server issues, which I elected to not count. So one more five-minute segment. You have till 1 hour 24 on my clock.
Servers are stable now.
So you made a sexy emo alternative cat girl. Well done.
Wait, you say emo? She's not emo at all.
She's got emo hair.
She has black hair with purple highlights.
All people who have black hair are not emo.
Black hair with purple highlights, Thurlton.
That was
kind of
emo.
You're from Portland. You're the expert.
There's no hair covering the eyes.
I'm sorry. I'm from Portland. I am the close to a man on the scene for hipsters, not for emo people.
Well, they're all kind of congruent now.
Yeah. Durin, a person everyone in the suburbs will identify emo people.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah, this is emo. This is more like punk.
No, I'll give you alternative. I will not give you punk because she has spiky. Okay. Like, it's spiky as well. Like, you can't.
Well, it's Japanese spiky. Come on. Anyway, I made a lancer. Yes. That's what matters.
Actually, not to piss off Dern too much, but it reminded me of like a schoolgirl in like armor.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. Like, if you asked a schoolgirl what she'd want to look like, it would come up with something pretty close to this. I want a big lance, and I want a mini skirt, and I want to be sexy. But I want to be a cat girl, because I like cat ears.
Is like my one problem with my armor right now. Let me live. Everything else is great, but yeah, that mini skirt's got to go. So I made a lancer because I couldn't pass up how awesome Dragoons looked.
Yep.
In their armor.
She looks pretty cool.
So I'm towards that. Okay. The game's, so like Brad said, it is an MMO. Like, mm-hmm. One of your first quests that you get eventually when you're actually first starting to kill stuff is go, like, kill 5 ladybugs and 5 squirrels and 5 whatever plant things. Like, it is an MMO-ass MMO.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I enjoy about it probably the most is so the game has quests. There are people with exclamation points above their heads, mm-hmm. and you go up and talk to them, and they give you quest dialogue, and they tell you to go kill stuff or do this or do that.
Yeah.
And you got a quest tracker, and you got circles on the map, and you have a symbol above their head that is different. Once you have completed it, and you go and turn it into them, and there are rewards. It's refreshing after Guild Wars 2 to actually have that back again.
I'm curious. How long before it gets boring again? If just a back and forth is necessary, or
see, that's the thing, like it doesn't, because the other thing it has is dynamic events. Like it actually has both, and that's probably one of the best things.
And you know what? If it had better combat, I'd think it would be the better game. Like I like having both.
I think you left the game before the combat had a chance to get good, because it's a combo based system. So it's a lot of for the Lancer, for instance, I want to try to be behind the enemy as much as possible because I have abilities that get boosted from that. One in particular, if I'm behind them, I get like 10% bonus damage for like 20 seconds. So like I'll actually, stun them, run behind them, use that ability to boost my damage. And then I'll use like my number 2 ability to slow them. And then like use my main ability, which then changed to my number 3 ability, which now changes to my shift modified 3 ability.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I can get behind them again, I'll use my 5 because it's my most powerful hit. And
are familiar with Guild Wars 1, it's as if they built the whole combo system off of the assassin, but without like the idea of points. Things are just on cooldowns. So you just like combo.
Things are on cooldowns, but you do have resources.
Like, well, you do have mana, but it's usually enough to last a whole fight, right? Like
Really? There's absolutely resource management in this game.
Wow.
It seems different per class, but I was playing with a friend. We were doing a dungeon, and he's an archer. And I was actually running out of TP, which is what non-magic users use for their abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And he still had quite a bit, so it seems like it's kind of balanced differently for different classes.
Right.
But I also a bit harder than he does.
Wait, so he was archer, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what I played. That's kind of why. Because archers, everything's really cheap. You just kind of go for it. Yeah.
And then, like, archer also has, like, some things that just straight up don't even cost TP.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas I don't have as much with that. Like, I have my stun, and that's pretty much it. But I also have an ability that just straight up, like, it's on a pretty long cooldown, like 120 seconds. But it, like, straight up gives me 400 TP. And so I've recently gotten that, so that helps a little bit. But no, there is absolutely resource management that you have to worry about. Very much important, at least for the Lancer, for positioning. You want to try and be behind the target as much as you possibly can. This is a Holy Trinity game, so you do have tanks, you do have MMO, you do have DPS. You have 4-man groups with dungeons, which actually is kind of nice because it's a lot easier than to coordinate with the other DPS.
Yeah.
But the downside to that, I feel like, is it kind of negates the use of a utility class, because any class who brings in utility into there is doing so in sacrificing DPS. I haven't gotten far enough to know how much that actually matters.
And there are classes. If it's balanced well, then that'll become important as the game goes on.
Yeah.
And we've hit our mark now, so I'll give you your closing statements about Final Fantasy, because we've already talked about, like, in the 2-hour special, we talked about like how it all works, and it seems to be a pretty decent game, and it's pretty, and it's totally Final Fantasy in like a way I wasn't expecting, and it's very Final Fantasy and kind of the way you want it to be as well. And I think, like, in terms of like my closing statements, it was just like, it turns out that the Square Enix core team still knows how to make good games, and that's kind of where I'd leave it. Yeah,
like, why aren't these guys making the main series? Because these guys know how to make a good game, apparently. Yeah. What I like about it is kind of what I, you know, had said in that 2-hour thing we did. Mm-hmm. Is that, like, this game has legitimized subscription-based MMOs for me again. Like, I'm totally on board with paying $15 a month for this game because it offers to me what I feel like Guild Wars 2 lacked.
Yeah.
But more importantly, like, it's an interesting game, I feel like, because there's nothing revolutionary that it's doing.
Yeah.
It's not like Guild Wars 2 where, like, the dynamic...
I like the job system. I think that might actually... Yeah,
it's kind of a play on what they did in Final Fantasy XI, because Final Fantasy XI had a similar thing where, like, one character could be all jobs, but they streamlined it a lot more in this one by basing it on the weapon you're using, whereas in that game, in XI, you actually had to go, like, back to your Mog house and change out your class there, and then
and I think that this is a cool direction for MMOs to go. Like, Guild Wars 2 is obviously doing it in terms of, like, your weapon changing how your character plays. You can't necessarily change classes, but this is kind of, like, taking that further, and I like that. So
and I did get my first, like, few my headset cut out, so I can't hear if you're talking right now. But my I did get my first few cross-class skill slots, and so I've gotten one skill now.
Cool.
And that's really cool because, like, I leveled Pugilist up to, like, level 6 at one point. And so, like, now I have an ability that just increases my evasion.
Yay.
Which is totally not my class does, but, like, it helps a lot when suddenly I pull threat off the tank.
And that uses mana, right? Like, unlike your main stuff?
No, that one uses TP also.
Oh, really?
Okay. If it's a non-magical ability, it'll use TP.
All right. And with that...
Pugilist's Launcher.
One last thing. I'll give you one last thing because you really want to talk about this game. One last thing. Just say it. You have one sentence. Go.
I have some pretty fucking cool mounts, guys.
Yeah, he gave us pictures of his Chocobo mount, and... Like, you can obviously Google those at home. Google the mounts in this game because they all look pretty cool. Especially, I'm not sure if there's pictures of the Magitek armor yet.
Yeah, just Google that one. The best part about the Magitek one is it's not necessarily based on the model from Final Fantasy VI. It's actually based on the concept art.
Magitek. How do you spell it? T-E-K.
M-A-G-I-T-K. Yeah.
Armor from Final Fantasy XIV.
While you're looking that up, I will say the game does also have fast travel, which helps a lot. But it's not like the annoying, like, I feel like the annoying way Guild Wars 2 does it, where I got to go to the map, like, zoom it all the way out, go find where I'm wanting to go, zoom back in. I literally, like, hit a button. It brings, like, a list of places that I have attuned to, and I can click on one, and then I go there.
Man, Magitek armor looks pretty cool, yo. Anyway.
It does. All right.
So, from there, we're going to move on to news. Anyone else have anything else they want to say about what they've been doing before we go on to news? We're good? All right.
Well, what's so, new with you?
The only news topic... Thank you, Thurbleton. I don't know, man. What's new with you? The only thing I really want to talk about is... And this is just a point in love rather than anything else. Hey, guys. Hey, Durin. Say I told you that there was this tablet with controls on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it had two screens...
Wait, like a tablet with two screens, so, like one on each side? Like,
no.
So are we talking like two iPads duct taped together?
A screen sandwich?
That would be pretty cool. Like the surface was that or something. Like whatever was before the surface, I forgot what it was called. It was like the Microsoft thing. But no, that's not like that. It's like, so say it's like 10 inches big or so, or maybe a little bit smaller, but like. The two screens are on the one surface, yo. It's not on both sides or anything. It's just like it's on the one surface.
Oh, okay. And then it like folds over and you can put it in your pocket.
No. Like I know why you'd want to do that because that sounds really useful and you know you can protect the screens and stuff. But no. It's just on the surface and they don't it's not like the whole thing is the two screens. They're just like a subset of the surface. So it's like two small screens on this pretty big flat surface.
Oh, is that so is that the new Leap Pad? That's what that is. Okay, I got you.
Well, no, only one of them's touch-based. The other one's just a screen.
You're giving this news item way too much time.
Actually, I want to correct on a couple of things, all joking aside. First off, the whole thing is actually touchscreen.
What?
Top and bottom.
Why?
Because it's actually one screen that's separated by a piece of plastic.
Yeah. But you can, so I don't think they're not accepting inputs from the top one.
Because of that, the entire screen is actually touchscreen. Nothing will ever use touch on the top because no other 3DS game does that. But yeah, the whole thing is actually touchscreen.
So we've been around about talking about, with no real subtlety, the Nintendo 2DS, the latest great invention from the Nintendo Company of Japan.
So I got a question for you guys about this real quick. did either of you have the same feeling I did when you read that? I was at lunch at work, and mm-hmm. I got an email from IGN, like, breaking news. And I read it, and I'm like, I actually had to think, like, what month is this? Like, is it April Fool's Day and I just forgot? This is August.
There's like a 200 post forum thread of, be serious, guys. When you first heard of the 2DS, do you think it was a joke? And I totally did. I didn't hear it from a respected source. I was like a throwaway comment on like a live stream somewhere that I heard the name 2DS. I was like, oh, like that 2DS thing.
If you thought Nintendo could get dumber, like couldn't get any dumber with their names, with the Nintendo Wii U.
Maybe not dumber, but just more confusing with their names.
Yeah, I think this is dumb. I don't think this is as dumb as the Wii U. But I think it is a hilariously accurate name for what it is. Because it's like, we took the 3DS, but we didn't want the 3D. So we called it the 2DS. Because everything you see is in 2D. It's the... Oh, so, man.
here's my thing about it. Mm-hmm. Again, like I, you know, razzing on it and everything else, but honestly, as a parent with a mm-hmm. child that is under the recommended age to use the 3D slider on the 3DS,
yeah,
once it's a little bit cheaper or my son is a little bit older, I absolutely would buy one of these for my son because I can give that to him and not have to worry about him screwing up his eyes mm-hmm. and have my 3DS to myself to play Pokemon X all my lonesome.
I kind of like
Pokemon XXX. Shiboy will kill me if I don't do it.
Why? Riven will kill me if I don't do that.
I'm a person who kind of only just wants Phoenix Wright and on 3DS. Like I know that what's his face, Fire Emblem's probably pretty good, and Shin Megami Tensei is probably pretty good. But those games will work on this thing because this is fully compatible. So all right, let's break it down. This is the 2DS. It's the new system from Nintendo. It's the same as 3DS, but it's a stupid little tablet thing that looks really ugly, and they move the shoulder buttons to the top of the tablet. Then don't ask me why that makes sense, but apparently it does.
Wait, what? They're on the top of it?
Yeah, they're on the top.
And this thing's for kids?
Yeah. I don't... There's a picture of a kid using it, and his fingers do not get anywhere near the top. I don't know. So it's just really dumb. It's possibly the ugliest device I've ever seen.
This actually seems worse than the Game Boy Micro.
You know what? The Game Boy Micro is actually pretty cute. Like, and I would never buy it because why would you want smaller Game Boy?
But magnifying glasses.
Exactly, but it looked good. Screen. And it was like the screen is supposed to be really good. Apparently, I don't know. It's small. But I don't know. But in this, it's just it looks dumb. It has less features, but it plays all the games. It still plays DS games and. It's really cheap. It's like $130. And
I imagine the battery will last a lot longer given that it doesn't have to worry about 3D.
Yeah, and like the screens are small as well. Like it's the size of a 3DS original screen. So that they're really small screens. So it'll probably be pretty good in the battery life. And look how freaking huge that is. I bet it freaking has a gigantic battery and lasts like 30 hours, I might be sold. Like I might be.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's kind of weird because I only really want to play three games.
Like, don't forget, if you want to turn on Wi-Fi, you got to do it in software now because they had to get rid of the Switch.
I'm fine with that. You know, reasons. Like, if it was a big battery, then might not even need. Like, I could probably just leave that on, right? Like, I'm kind of in the position where I kind of want this.
That's just something like the weirdest change. Like, okay, go back to the smaller screens because it's cheaper. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make it not clamshell because it's meant for kids and you don't want them breaking hinges. Sure. I get that.
Okay.
Make it one screen to cut costs. I get that. You know, remove the 3D slider because, again, this is for kids. I get that. Yeah. Remove the Wi-Fi slider and put it in software?
Well, like, if it's for kids, like, they could turn it off by accident and not know why they can't play Pokemon with their friends. Like, it's I don't know how it'll break down.
No, but they can turn it on by accident and accidentally connect with a pedophile.
And then buy shitloads of stuff off the eShop, and then you'll be in debt because your credit card... I don't know. Like, this...
I'll show you yours if you show me mine.
The only reason I wouldn't buy this is if it's, like, really chintzy. Like, if the reviews come in and it's, like, really bad build quality and it feels cheap.
Have you really ever heard of, like, bad build quality Nintendo?
The original DS was supposedly pretty bad.
No, the original DS was actually a fucking brick. It just had... it had an unfortunate fault with, one of its hinges.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't know, but yeah,
there's no hints, no moving parts.
Because I'd never turn on the 3D anyway. Like, especially with the games I'm playing, the 3D isn't pivotal to those experiences. Like, I know it'll probably be pretty cool in Phoenix Wright, especially with the courtroom and stuff. And I'm worried that if that game actually needs the 3D for some of its puzzle solving, that could be weird. But if it works, and if the reviews say it doesn't really need the 3D effect and you can turn that off, that's pretty cool. Then I might just freaking buy, like, import a 3DS, a 2DS.
The thing I'm not sure about this, though, is, like, with the 2DS, like, doesn't this kind of make it so that now all developers have to make the 3D, like, non-essential?
But, like, they weren't anyway. The only people who apparently used the 3D to a large extent was Nintendo, right?
But now, like, they can't. Because there will be a segment of their players who won't even be able to turn it on.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Like, they cannot make it essential. They can make it, like, a cool little thing that's there, but they can no longer make it absolutely essential.
So, okay, I forgot about this, but probably one of the weirdest things about this thing, aside from, you know, Wi-Fi and software, is it still has two outward-facing cameras, so it can take pictures in 3D, but it can't view them. So, but you can totally sync it up with another 3DS and send the pictures to that one and view them there.
Great. No, man. This is such a weird, like, this year has been so weird for gaming shit, like, just in general, that it's just, I don't know. Like, this, I am not surprised. It got to the point where I saw this and I was like, huh, it's stupid. And I thought it was a joke at first, but I'm not surprised. And it looks like a Nintendo product, so... Anyway, and that's essentially it. I just wanted to let people know that, yes, we think it's dumb, but I think it's actually, it might be pretty cool.
It could have some merits, especially a year from now when it's $100.
Man, if I could get that for $100. Oh, let's see when Phoenix Wright comes out. If it gets a release date, I will decide then what to do. But I'm thinking I'm probably still going to import a black DSXL, like 3DS XL, because those things just look too sexy for me to pass up. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Or a red one. Red ones look really good too. So that was news. Anything else from news that you guys want to talk about? I don't remember anything else particularly big coming on.
I guess in light of Durin's excitement for subscription-based MMOs and the high-tier quality they provide.
Yep.
Elder Scrolls Online and WildStar both announced subscription-based as well as other operations like cash stores for their games.
Yeah, they did.
That's going to happen.
Yeah, so
that's really all I want to talk about. I think that bears enough.
Well, no, okay. I feel like because so many people have already started kind of claiming doom and gloom for Final Fantasy for choosing to be subscription and then, you know, these games as well. Mm-hmm. I do have to say, I feel like the way that WildStar is going about it is all wrong. Mostly because they are coming out of the gate before ever even, like, they're not releasing until spring next year. And they're coming out saying, we are charging a subscription fee, but we're totally looking into microtransactions too. We're going to keep our options open.
But, like, this is the right time to do it.
That bothers me.
This is like a year out.
That bothers me because every other MMO that has gone free to play, that's been the model, is let's go ahead and do subscription fees. Mm-hmm. But let's have a cash shop in there so that a year or 9 months, in the case of The Secret World, later, we can go ahead and just go free to play and transition directly into that. Like, that feels like that's what WildStar is planning. given, you know, that they are being upfront about, yes, we are looking at microtransactions. I thought that Elder Scrolls was going a different direction because they had said that they do not want to charge extra money for any content in the game. They wanted players, that's why they went with the subscription model, was they wanted players to have access to everything the game has to offer and not have to, the way they put it was, not have to like stand outside a dungeon that you're getting ready to go into with a friend and the game says, you know, sorry, please deposit $10 or whatever. Mm. But then like days later, an Elder Scrolls guy was being interviewed and said like, yeah, we'll totally have a cash shop that has some cosmetic stuff in there, like some cosmetic and fun items in there, which like, if they keep it just cosmetic and fun, I'm kind of okay with that. But at the same time, like whenever started going that direction, I started feeling real grimy about it. Cause like, it's just like, you're already charging me $15 a month to have full access to your subscription based game. And now you want to charge me $25 for a mount. Like, I don't,
Yeah, it's whenever there's a cash shop, you immediately wonder, like, okay, when are you going to implement the pay-to-win encounter? When are you going to implement this thing that I have to pay extra money for on top of buying the box, buying the monthly subscription to get this special thing?
Yeah, that's my problem. It's not that I think that there's going to be, like, pay-to-win. My problem is, like, I already paid you for the box. I'm already actively paying you for, you know, the $15 a month for access to your game. And then you want to charge me for things that should be like things that you are spending your development time and my subscription money on developing, and now you want to charge me extra money for it. Like that's where I have the problem with it.
Right.
I guess like in what other scenario in which this pay model is acceptable is like, can you guys think of it? Like the only thing I can think of is maybe television. If, like, exactly. Do you need a cable subscription to get pay-per-view?
Yes.
For, like, wrestling matches and stuff?
Yeah, it's television. Yes. This is the television model, which...
Yeah, this is paying for cable and then also having to pay for HBO.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Like, when I said earlier that this is fine,
This is more like paying for cable and then having to pay extra for HD channels.
That's pretty shitty. I didn't know people had to do that. But no, yeah, this is fine from like a good move for them to do from a like marketing standpoint. You want that shit out of the way a year before the game comes out, so you have the whole year to talk about the other things to do with the game and make people like try to sell that to people. At least now people know what they're getting into and they can be sold on it. But
like this is the last time to talk about stuff like that for this year. Like it. I hate to say, but like PAX Prime, the next time they'll have a chance to announce stuff like this is maybe PAX East. I mean, Dragon Con is also happening either right like this weekend or very soon after it. Mm. So they won't have like when it comes to big announcements and having players actually play your game at a con or something. This is it.
Yeah, I don't like. I think with WildStar, like, I think their bigger problem is they've gotten like hype up around that game way too early. And I feel like they're going to run out of steam long before that game actually releases.
Right.
Because I remember there was a time when amongst like MMO vets, WildStar was definitely a thing. It was being talked about. People were excited.
That was like and I feel last like already, year, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I feel like already that's kind of died off. And then about the time it's died off, now they're saying, oh, yeah, we're going to charge you subscription fees too. And so then a lot of people are just like, what fuck you, like, no, like I'm not paying a subscription fee for this game that is a WoW ripoff, even though it's probably not.
It's weird because
they had a lot of work ahead of them to try to hype that game back up before release.
Yeah, they have to do that. And the other thing is, what the fuck was I? Oh god, I had a point to make and I've lost it. Anyway, with WildStar, is that all we have to talk about? Because I don't think, does anyone really care about that game anymore? I don't know.
I mean,
kind of seem fun.
I got some friends back home who are interested in it. It's
right.
It has a lot of potential, but I guess we'll find out when they start putting it in the hands of players.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. And I'm happy I forgot about it.
Players, unfortunately, we can't fucking talk about it.
I was going to say I kind of like the way Final Fantasy did it, where it was just like dark for 2 years and then came back, did betas, and released. And that was it. That's how games should
Like Elder Scrolls, kind of the same way. Like Elder Scrolls has been in development since 2007. Yeah. It wasn't until this that they announced it exactly. to show gameplay off, mm-hmm. and then it's coming out next year.
Yeah, that's just how that you. And I know that like MMOs are evolving things, so they like to engage people early because they have stuff to show really early. But nah, man, just games stay dark for a reason because the community doesn't know what they want. So if you take community feedback too early, you'll fucking fuck up your game because people are stupid. And the people who scream the loudest are usually wrong anyway. And B, like just it'll kill the hype if it's just on and on and on. Well, and always know about
that. Not only that, but like, you know, trends change as you go on. And so like rather than to like, I feel like if you show it off too early and stuff and you're showing kind of the trends that are big at the time and then suddenly like there's a massive shift and there's a shift in your development because of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look as bad if nobody knew that you made that shift and they just assumed that's how it always was. Whereas in this, like, oh God, we're like a year, like 6 months out from release and they're making these massive changes. What does this mean for the game? Is it doomed? Like, it's just not good.
Exactly.
Keep quiet for a while. You know, make your game.
And with that, we didn't get a chance to talk about Gamescom. So, Durbleton, from here on, we're probably going to be talking about console stuff. Oh, no, do you guys want to talk about the game? All right, we can talk about news, and then we can hit our main topic, and then we can go to our possible last topic when it comes to console stuff. Is that
well, we just
that,
talked that about cool news.
We have one more thing for news, which is Gamescom. Do you guys... Just real quick, Xbox is making some good moves. We might talk about that later, whatever, especially in Europe. Did you guys get a chance to see any of the new games that are announced at Gamescom?
No.
Durin? I hate you. I hate you all. All right. I just want to say Rhyme looks freaking awesome. This is my game of the show. It looks absolutely freaking... Oh, Durin's AFK for a sec. Rhyme looked amazing. Did you see Rhyme, Doubleton?
I don't think so. I might have, but is Rhyme the new one from Xbox?
No. So Rhyme is the one by Tequila Works, who worked on Deadlight, which is a pretty meh game. But it looks like Wind Waker crossed with Ico. So it's this really painter, like not painterly, but like cel-shaded-esque art style. But it's just like a lone kid who gets washed up on an island and he has to explore. So it's like a platformer adventure game. And it's good. It just looks absolutely staggeringly good. And that's all we like know about it. It was just announced offhand at the Sony press conference. There's also that other game, which was everyone went to the Rapture, or everyone's gone to the Rapture, which is only interesting to talk about because they no longer plan to release it at launch on PC. It started as a PC developed game, then Sony picked it up. Because they went over budgetary constraints. They needed someone to help them finish it. So Sony picks it up, and it's a PS4 exclusive for now. And people got mad, obviously, because they wanted it to come to PC. It's by the guys who made Dear Esther, and who are making Machine for Pigs, Amnesia. And that's it, essentially, for Gamescom. As a European, like a pseudo European, I can't really comment to how successful the soccer announcement for Xbox One will be. We'll see that when it gets there. All right, Doubleton.
Well, okay, I thought we were going to talk about what our predictions for the game of year was.
Yeah, that's the plan when Durin gets back.
What's this console stuff you're leading up to?
The console stuff I was leading up to was... So we kind of Sony announced their release date, which is the other big announcement for Gamescom, which is November 15th in the US and November 29th in the EU, which is fine. Like, I don't mind being 2 weeks late. Like, for people that don't know, like, back in the PS2 days, I think we were like 3 months or 4 months later when we got those, or the PS3, one of the two. So we usually get things like usually next year, but the 2 week release like window is really short. Microsoft is also committing to releasing in the majority of their originally announced countries this year as well. But they still haven't released a release date. But essentially, now that we know the dates and the window for Microsoft, and we've seen the launch lineups, that they've been released for both games as well. When Durin gets back, unless he's already back, I was planning to go through that and to look at the launch games and where we think both stand are at launch and which we'd recommend to people. But since he's not here, Thurbleton, Do you have any like thoughts? Has anything changed for you being a PC guy as to whether you care about the consoles or not?
I mean, like, I definitely care about... I'm more prone to get a PS4 than I am an Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
If they had stuck to their guns, I might have been intrigued by the possibility of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they're just trying... Like, they're backtracking to make a shittier version of PS4. I only say shittier because it's got less... Like, from what we've seen, the hardware specs of it are less.
Yes, and that those have also come to light... I think in a really recent, I think it wasn't a developer interview. It was a interview with a engineer who worked there, but it was actually on paper. They finally nailed down this text, and it's a weird non-issue because the specs for the Xbox One are essentially just a slight bump up from what the VG leaks were at the freaking start of the year. So the VG leaks was like, it was 1.2 teraflop. So which is weaker, specifically talking about the GPU here, which is weaker than the PS4, and because Microsoft announced that 55 megahertz or whatever the fuck it was, spec bump, it's gone up to 1.3 teraflop, and that's so still behind the PS4. So it's just like there's weird non-issues like that. So Durin, before we go move on, any thoughts about the PS4 release date, and where do you think Microsoft will land before or after them?
I think we were
predicting October. We were like, October 29th is really good for the PS4. And I'm not surprised they went for November, but I'm still kind of like...
Yeah. Like, I think it was a rumor, but didn't Microsoft... Like, it's been rumored that Microsoft is going to announce 11.5. Or like the week before.
I heard 11.8 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was the week before. It's 11.8.
So here's the thing. Like, I feel like had Microsoft announced a date first, mm-hmm. Sony would have gone October.
Right.
But because Microsoft was still keeping quiet, and like Sony wanted to get a date out there, that's mm-hmm. that's why they went with that, because they figure, okay, if we get in this week, you know, the week that they chose, which is, I believe, the 12th? Is that right?
15th. Sure. 15th. It was 15th also, for it was 15th for PS4 in North America, 29th in the EU. Yeah.
So it is the week of the 12th, kind of speaking.
Yeah, so if they chose mm-hmm. that week, they could feel pretty good, because either they feel like most likely, especially given if the Microsoft hardware production problems rumors were true,
mm-hmm.
Most likely Microsoft will either hit the week after or the same week. And Sony is totally okay with either one. They probably prefer same week, honestly.
Man.
Because if they did
that
same week,
that would be crazy.
Release,
Jesus
well,
Christ.
That would be crazy. That would fucking death blow to Microsoft, because when you're looking at two consoles side by side as a non-hardcore gamer,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna go with the one that's cheaper, just straight up. It's $100.
Well, it's more so than that. It's you're gonna go with that, but then when it comes to that Monday's like chair announcement of like these are the sales projected on opening weekend,
mm-hmm.
are way below because people are competing between these two.
Right.
That I think is the biggest reason why.
Yeah, but even if it happens like the week after, again, it's great for Sony because they get a week head start on Microsoft on the sales. And I think it's Sony feels very comfortable with this whole launch process, how it's going compared to Microsoft, and it's never been more clear than when these reports, granted unconfirmed, but
yeah.
I mean, we saw a fucking box. That they are actually just straight up packing in Killzone and another controller and the PlayStation I for the same price as the Xbox One.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's like pretty. I don't know about that Killzone game, but yeah, that's.
I don't know about that Killzone game, but I'm pretty sure that other than maybe in Europe, it'll sell better than FIFA. So.
But FIFA is we were saying before we and I don't know how I'll edit this. I might edit that segment down where you were gone because we're actually on the transition between topics. But we were saying that the FIFA segment, so the FIFA packing is actually a pretty fucking big deal because it's the biggest game.
It is,
it's one of the biggest games in the world. It's up there with Call of Duty in the like number one and number two. Biggest games in the world, which is kind of crazy, like because it's a Europe only thing, but like it's kind of just for stupid people, but not FIFA itself, because I have no idea how soccer games work. I'm just like, because FIFA with the Xbox One, even in the UK, is still more expensive than an PS4 with a copy of FIFA purchased separately. Here it's different. Like in Australia, it's the Xbox One's only $50 Australian more than the PS4, which is crazy because I don't know why Sony shafted us that much, but whatever. So the copy of FIFA is like a $40 savings, right? But I'm not sure if they've announced whether Australia counts as part of Europe for that. And more importantly, FIFA is nowhere big here, nowhere near as big here as it is in the UK. So for the place that it actually matters, it's still more expensive than a PS4 plus a copy of FIFA. And that's crazy to me. I'm just worried because I think that FIFA is lead platform on the Xbox One, or it seems to be, especially with how much like they're pushing it for the Xbox One. So if, for example, the reviews come out and it says FIFA runs better on Xbox One, which it could, like, we don't fucking know, right? And it also comes packed in, that could be a big deal. And we don't know until it happens, right? But that's only in Europe. And Sony, it's what do you feel being an American that you're not getting a pack-in whereas the Europeans are?
Well, honestly, like, the Sony one I don't care as much about because it is increasing the price of the system.
Yeah, and it's cool.
I wasn't interested in spending $500 on a system anyway.
Right.
So, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact, if I was actually interested in Xbox One at launch, and, I don't know. Because I know enough about this, like, I want to be angry about it, or at least annoyed about it. But then I think about
they're
it.
Paying like, more well, for the system, right?
So the Europeans are kind of shafted on the price of the system. Yeah. So it kind of evens out anyway.
Hmm.
So like, because I understand that, it really doesn't bother me that much. But cool. I can see how a lot of people who don't understand how conversion rates work, I could see how why they would be maybe a little ticked off about it. But then again, they're wanting to buy an Xbox One at lunch. So you know, that's on them.
So wait, let's move on to just like wrapping up this segment of news. When's Black Friday?
We have another news topic, but
yeah. Before we get there, when's Black Friday?
Black Friday is the
28th or something. I heard
29th.
Black Friday is the third Friday of November.
Sorry. For people outside the US, 22nd. Yes. Okay. So that's 1 week after, like a legitimate week after Sony released the PS4, which is weird because it's releasing on Friday, but that's kind of fine because consoles generally were like released near weekends, which is always odd, but there you go. So I heard that it's a bad idea for Microsoft to actually release on Black Friday. And that sounds counterintuitive to me, but like, is that the case? Like, where is it smart for them to release? Because let's assume
before
they can't
Black
beat
Friday.
Sony. Before Black Friday, why specific? As a person who works in retail, and I have never worked in the U.S., so you're the only real expert here.
So that's kind of the thing is that with Sony releasing on the week before Black Friday, that puts Microsoft in the corner. I didn't realize it was that close to Black Friday. That puts Microsoft in the corner because either they release earlier, which I think maybe they're afraid to do again if the constraints on their production are true. That's going to be hard for them to do, or they're forced to release the same week because they can't release they cannot release the week of or after Black Friday. They cannot do that.
Why? This doesn't make sense to me. Like,
here's the thing with Black Friday: people will camp out and just like wait to get those things and spend a lot of their money on Black Friday.
Well, more specifically, here's the thing about Black Friday and why it's so important. For a lot of stores in the United States, they get the majority of their yearly revenue from that one day.
Oh, they just get they get a huge amount on that day. But like, just, why can't they release like it, for
the
example, on the Monday?
Their yearly revenue. I mean,
they could.
They would never release it on a Monday. Oh, they might release it on a Monday. They release it on Tuesdays, I think.
Okay.
They could release it. The problem with that is, You generally don't want to release it during that week in general, because the other thing about Black Friday is it's attached to Thanksgiving. Okay. People are going to be out of town. People are going to be moving around. People are going to be with family. You don't want your hype for your system that you're launching right. to get overshadowed by the holiday. You want it to be out in stores long before that holiday hits. And that's why Sony is releasing the week before. That gives them that whole weekend leading up to the week of Thanksgiving to get the hype up there, get people out there to the stores, seeing it, getting those initial sales, and then selling shitloads of bundles on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Also, games come out on, for anybody who doesn't know, the reason why games come out on Tuesdays is because businesses have their quarterly sales or whatever, or like the weekly sales on Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives them the whole week to say when, like, all right, we've made this much money in the week because the game came out right at the end of that time frame.
Right.
Yeah.
So Darbleton, you're the expert on the subject. Where, if you were Microsoft, when would you, and say you couldn't be in the first week of November. So you couldn't be
11, 12, 13.
So 11, 12, 13? Is what it was November, so 11-11.
That's the Tuesday of the same week.
Oh, right. Fuck. Australian versus US writing of dates. You got me there. I was like, 11th of December? That's like the next month. No, yeah, sure. So Tuesday of the, that would be... So let's just take that. So let's just say they either release on the Tuesday the 12th or Tuesday the 19th, that which is my guess, because I don't think they can beat Sony to market.
I think... Between the two, they have to because they can't release on the 19th.
Really? So Tuesday the 12th is where we're pinning in the day.
That's out. The day before or 2 days before Thanksgiving. They cannot release 2 days before Thanksgiving. It doesn't give them nearly enough shelf time.
So we have – well, yeah, that's kind of important because the guys on the Bombcast were saying if they release on the 15th, that gives them a whole week to get the second shipment to the stores.
Yes.
So that's really important.
That's the thing. I totally forgot about that. That second shipment is crucial because – The first shipment will sell out, like it always does.
Yeah.
So you have to get that second. And that first shipment will sell out just from fucking pre-orders in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So you have to get that second shipment in stores for Black Friday. Like up. You have to do it. So yeah, they absolutely cannot release on the 19th. There's no way.
But Durin, how about Cyber Monday? Anyway.
Cyber Monday doesn't fucking matter. It's not for consoles.
So let's say they hit the 12th. So what would matter? So would it matter? And we know the large scale things. These console generations go for years. This is a footnote of a footnote of the console generations. But would it matter if they hit 3 days before Sony on the 12th?
Yes.
And so they're $100 more, and it's only 3 days difference. So remember, like the Wii hit a couple days after the PS3, and that was kind of really important in itself as well because I think the PS3 came out in like the just before the weekend, so pretty much the same time as they are now, and the Wii came out on the Sunday, and they destroyed Sony even the first week.
But here's the big difference between that and this scenario is that in this scenario it's an actual fight, like it is
sure.
It is Microsoft versus Sony. Well, what I mean by that is like Nintendo with the Wii, like they were doing their own thing. There was no real comparison in the PS3 and the Wii.
Mm.
I mean, that's like apples and oranges. But
it was also like $600 versus $250 or something, whatever the fuck it was. Yeah. So,
but you look at the PS4 and the Xbox One, and that is legitimate. Like, you know, I mean, they're going head to head here on this launch.
Yeah,
that's cool. You know, comparable systems and all that, and so Microsoft, especially with them being the more expensive console, it would be a huge win for them if they can manage to get out to market before Sony.
All right.
Like I think that's one of the biggest reasons why they've been holding off, and why even at Gamescom they weren't ready to give a release date is I think they are trying as hard as they possibly can to just squeeze every day earlier than Sony that they can get.
Yeah. And well, yeah, they reduced the amount of countries they're releasing in, which we said before you came back from your break. And I guess that really factors into this because
the biggest reason for that is
localization,
the
Kinect voice recognition.
The Kinect voice recognition localization was actually delaying the release, and finally they just decided to go ahead and they need to release it. So like there's countries that aren't getting the Xbox One right at launch, and then there's also countries that are getting it, but that the Xbox One voice recognition won't work at launch.
So that's the I assume what they mean by won't work is it'll accept English, but it won't accept their native language. Like
I think
it would be stupid if you can't say Xbox on in a different country just because you're in that different country, right? It's the, that would be the dumb. If, no, if that happens, I will laugh. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that could be a major problem. Because really, if I was a console launcher, I would just do English, French, maybe German, and that would be the majority. Maybe and Spanish for or whatever. I sound racist here, but I just legitimately don't know. Whatever they speak in Brazil is Brazilian? No, they speak a dialect of...
It's a dialect of Spanish, I know that
Spanish,
much.
Spanish, yeah. Yeah, so I just released in those four languages, and they're only doing five, so that's kind of what they're doing. So they have five languages for launch, and as a person who has some form of idea how long it would take to actually localize a whole operating system and user interface and voice input, I can see why it's taking them so long. But it also has that second advantage, right? It's still an advantage to reduce the amount of countries you're launching in to move that shipment to countries you actually want that. My theory is Sony launched, Sony picked the 15th because I think they weren't expecting 1 million pre-orders. Like, that's a big... The PlayStation 3 had like 300,000 units in the US on week one or so. And that those sold out immediately. And it took them like 2 weeks to come back into stock. And that was... What?
PS3 did not sell out. The PS3 was sitting on shelves.
Oh, right. Like, well, depends. Yeah, like in LA and New York, where I think GameSpot was doing coverage. Those two places sold out, but like the rest of America, I would assume. Well, it's always weird with launch week. But yeah, they only had 300,000 units, and they sold out in the places that with larger markets almost immediately, and it took them a long time to come back in. So when they said 1 million pre-orders and they acted like that was a big number, it is a big number. Like, it doesn't sound that big considering like the current consoles have sold like 70 million each. So this is literally 1/70th of the market. But those are the hardest of the hardcore who is buying it. And 1 million is actually really, really substantial. And that's only pre-orders. And that's... I think that they're going to be hitting numbers even higher than that with release, because I don't think they're only going to release 1 million on week one. I think they hit November 15th because they think they can bring like 2 million or 3 million to market, and that is just insane if they're able to do that, because that means by week two or week three they would already have met the launch install base or the current install base of the Wii U by the third week or so. Yeah. At most the second month, and that's crazy. But yeah, that was news. Did anything else? You had one more news item?
We have a couple more things. First one is Vita price cut. Vita is now $200.
That's what it needs to be. Yeah, that's what it needs to be. Cool.
Absolutely. I think it's going to sell a lot more units. I think that's a good move for them to do leading up to the launch of the PS4. Yeah. Partly because it allows them to allows them a much easier time to do bundles.
Yeah.
With the Vita. I think there was a rumored bundle of the PS4 and Vita for like $500. And if they actually manage that is insane. You're getting a Vita for $100.
Yeah. I already own a Vita, so I wouldn't buy it, but if I didn't own a Vita, I'd buy that immediately. Because like you and me, we're both Vita owners. And though that system doesn't have many unique games, the indie support for it is freaking awesome, and I would totally recommend it now. Like, especially seeing their games coming up for the Vita, totally. Even if you're just using,
with how good the indie scene is on the Vita, like $200 for a console isn't bad when you're looking at like $10 to $15 per game. So
yeah, it's totally worth it. And almost all those games have cross-buy, which is amazing.
Well, and then of course, if you're getting a PS4, you got remote play. So like, there's definitely going to be legitimate uses, I think, for that system. Finally,
it's only been 2 years, right?
Speaking of finally, there's also been a price cut on the Wii U. Is being cut. They're actually phasing out the 8 gig model, the shitty one that nobody should have bought anyway. Mm-hmm. And they are dropping the price of the deluxe model from $350 to $300.
So this is weird, and it's kind of interesting because both companies actually did this, so though in different ways. So Sony, instead of completely outmoding the 3G model, made the 3G model, which was $300, down to $199, and outmoded the Wi-Fi model, which is the one everyone wanted, because it was cheaper and why do you need 3D? I mean, 3G. So what you're getting now is literally a more functional device for cheaper, but what they're also doing is the bundles are still at that price point. So the Walking Dead bundle with a memory card included is still the $199. So you're getting the Vita, the Walking Dead, and a memory card for $199. And it's the 3G model. So if you want to, you can pop a 3G SIM card in there and you have a fully wireless Vita, which is actually really freaking cool. Nintendo's doing the same thing. So they outmoded, in their case, the one no one wanted, which is the $299 white Wii U. They're making the black Wii U the $299 price point. And the bundles, so the Wind Waker bundle, for example, is still going to be that price point. So you're going to get a Wind Waker, the bundled extras, so like, what was it, eShop credit or some shit, and like the
cooler. Well, not only that, but the controller is actually a Wind Waker themed controller. So actually, it's,
that's cool. You get
kind of a special controller out of it too.
Yeah, so you get like, and the charging station and shit like that, and all for $299 for the Wii U. So both of them are doing pretty cool price points.
Yeah, I think that was a really good move again on their part too. Coming into this holiday season, they're able to go into the holiday season knowing that their system is cheaper than the other two, which is what Nintendo needs.
Yes.
And they drop that price right before all of their what they're hoping to be their big hitters are going to be hitting the market.
Yes. Now, in this case, like in with the Vita, I think it's an awesome game system for an awesome price. I still don't think many people are going to buy it, but for the people who do recognize that it's a really cool system to have, they will, and that's awesome. But for the Wii U, they're in a kind of different spot because Sony announced there, like at the start of the year, that their projections for the Vita are pretty low. Like they don't really, they know not many people are going to buy it. Like they're only expecting like 2 million to be sold by the like middle of next year or so, like the end of this financial year. So they're projecting low. What do you think, as the resident Nintendo expert, that the Wii U is going to do for them at $399 for the good version?
You mean $299? $399 would do nothing for them.
Sorry, $299. Yeah.
Well, so at the actual price change, it's not going to do a whole lot because the only real compelling piece of software out there is Pikmin 3, which, granted, solid game.
Yeah.
But I think where it could do well for them is Christmas time, specifically families buying game system for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if your options are $300 Wii U, $400 PS4, or $500 Xbox One, and you look at the Wii U and, at, you know, again, as like a parent or a grandparent, and you're looking to buy a video game system for the kid, you're going to probably still go ahead and side with the Nintendo side because it has, you know, obviously games that are more geared towards probably the demographic you're buying for, and the friendlier price point.
But would the relatively uninformed person who would be making a decision based on those principles, would they go for the Wii U or the Wii? Because the Wii would be $199, right? Or like $149, something ridiculously cheap now. So
yeah,
and that is a huge library of games that, from my memory, are still on store shelves. Like they're still on store shelves here. Like it's not like they outmoded the Wii.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the thing: like huge library of games doesn't matter to the uninformed. They don't care how many games are available.
True.
All they care is like think of it this way: all they care is their son or grandson wants Pikmin. They think it looks cool. Man. They want that. Their son or grandson wants Mario.
Their grandson wants 101. Okay, I'll give you Mario and maybe one for 101, but I don't think there's a grandson out there who wants Pikmin nowadays.
They want the new Call of Duty, Durin.
My three-year-old sat there watching Pikmin videos over and over and over again until we finally bought it for him.
Yeah, but you're a Nintendo grandson. Household, right? So, like...
Not at all.
How do you find out about Pikmin? Or is it TV? There's TV ads? I don't know. I don't watch TV.
Well, no, because we had the Wii U and we had Nintendo Land, and there's actually a Pikmin game in Nintendo Land, and it's like his favorite one.
Oh, but yeah, but that you're like a very small subset of the audience out there if you have a Wii U already and you have a kid who's seen Pikmin.
Pikmin 3 is actually a very popular game.
Okay. All right. Okay. If it's actually selling well, then I'll rescind my statements because good for them on that point. So you think this will be good for them?
I think it'll be good for them. I don't know. Like, obviously Nintendo is not going to be coming out number one in this holiday season or anything like that.
No, I don't think so.
I find it a bit weird that Reggie, his reaction on record to the Xbox One and PS4 launch lineups was meh, considering that's what I could say about their entire lineup for their system.
Well, no, because you like Pikmin, don't you? Or have you not purchased Pikmin yet?
No, I haven't. Yeah, I bought it for my son. I have not played it.
Really?
Taken over the television.
But yeah, so there's Pikmin, and there's that Wind Waker actually looks beautiful.
Super Mario 3D World looks really interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful 101 looks interesting. I don't think it's going to sell as well as Nintendo and Platinum are hoping.
Oh God, did you see how that sold in Japan?
No.
It's okay. So I think what was it? The last couple of games Platinum put out, Vanquish put out like 50k in the first week. The Bayonetta sold like 300k or something like that in the first week across all systems. Wonderful 101 sold like 5k.
Ouch.
Yeah. It was. But well, like reviews would have been mixed.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't expect it to do well. Part of it is they haven't really hyped it. Like,
no,
there's nothing out there for it.
But I just heard the reviews are mixed, and the guys at A4 Podcasts have pretty mixed opinions of it. So there's that.
See, I don't know if that's going to be, you know, a big system seller, but I think, you know, Mario is going to be real good for them. Mm-hmm. I think that Donkey Kong was a misstep. Like, I already feel like that already was, and it hasn't even come out yet.
Mario Kart will be big.
Just like people are clamoring for, you know, more Mario, more this, more that. No one's out there saying, hey, make more Donkey Kong games.
Yeah. In fact, specifically, people were like, please let Metro do something new.
Last year.
Yeah.
And then port it to your home console. Yeah. No, like, if they were gonna, like, when there was like the rumors that like Rare was gonna make a game announcement, everyone got super excited. Or sorry, not Rare, Retro.
Yeah,
everyone got super excited. Like, oh man, they're gonna announce the next Metro game because everyone's dying for a Metro game, and they're all, yo guys, Donkey Kong Country, Frozen,
woo. But hey, I don't know. So let's wrap this topic up and move on. So in general, okay, let's do. We leave like further predictions for closer to launch date when we have every number, because I actually kind of will find it interesting if we can just do number predictions. But for now, I think that Sony's in a good spot, and we might talk about this more at the end of the show because there's the release lineups we can talk about and that kind of stuff. I think Microsoft has crawled their way back up into a pretty decent standing. I think it's very important that Sony said there was 1 million pre-orders and Microsoft had their thing the day after, I think, that their press conference was, or maybe like later in the day, and they didn't say anything along those lines, which is kind of important. And then, yeah, we talked about speaking on the chat while we're talking out loud. You can just say this out loud. Anyway, and then finally, what's his face? I think that the PS4 and Xbox One are going to do pretty interesting coming up close, but we'll get to our predictions on there, maybe close to the game, to those systems coming out, because I want to predict numbers. And with that, we're going to move on to our main topic for the week. Finally, news went on way longer than I expected. It's at Doubleton and Durin. I'm sorry.
I didn't do an ounce of talking for the news.
So I wanted to talk about Brothers and Dear Esther in this topic, but I think it's fine that they're not part of here. So for the main topic this week, before we end out the show and or have a bonus topic, is your personal games of the year so far, or where our picks are for the games of the year so far. I think it's really important.
As 10 games that are better than Brothers.
Well, because we haven't played it. How are we going to do this? So we can do like top threes each, because how we usually do during Game of the Year, or how we did last year, was we each had our own individual, but we didn't come up with a group because we just all have such different tastes. So I can spout off my top couple of games. But do we also want to, because it's interesting to do it at this point in what our games of the year so far are, because the new consoles haven't come out yet. So Watch Dogs.
How about we just talk about what our three main runners for Game of the Year are probably going to be, as well as a couple of games that we think might shake up that list, or that we're interested in, that are coming out on the next 4 months.
Sounds good. So wait, who wants to go first? Cause I got my list. I got my list ready to go, but Thurbleton.
I will go first only because I haven't talked that much in the past hour.
Sure.
So my game, like top three game of the year is probably going to be Kentucky Route Zero.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really enjoyed that.
Wait, so this is number three, working way up or the other way down?
In no particular order. I mean, just okay. Maybe number one. I don't know. I'm saying that's going to be up there.
All right.
Saints Row 4.
Really? Okay, cool.
I don't play it. I mean, like, it's just, it is a fun playground game.
All right, sure.
And maybe Gunpoint, not wow. Gunpoint or Dive Kick. Only because that game is, everything associated with the game. The fact that it was made by one guy, the way it mm-hmm. was made, the things he's using as DLC-esque incentives
mm-hmm.
are very unique and in ways I would encourage other games to do. And the game is right. fun too.
Wait, so let's give people some perspective here. Do you remember your games of the year for 2012? Just for people to give us an idea of what our usual like nominations for this kind of thing are?
If I were to not be in the headspace of recording mm-hmm. a podcast, probably.
Yeah. Okay, but you don't remember. All right, that's fine. Because I'll give people mine when we get to me. So those are
you guys were talking about console games for the past hour, so my head is sort of a fried egg.
That's fine. So those three. So it was Gunpoint, maybe Dive Kick, or instead of Gunpoint, Kentucky Route Zero, and Saints Row 4. Where would you say your number one from those would be?
Probably Kentucky Route Zero.
All right.
Now, the thing is you haven't even said anything, but I mm-hmm. have not mentioned Arma 3.
I know you haven't mentioned Arma 3. Why haven't you mentioned Arma 3, Doubleton?
Because I feel that game, for me at least, is the same. I'm getting the same feelings I'm getting when I played like League of Legends or Dota 2 or something.
What, just too engrossing?
It's too engrossing, and the amount of enjoyable experiences are few and far between, almost like I'm looking for that high and I'm not actually going in to enjoy it.
Right, right. Okay, cool. That makes sense. But since Kentucky Route Zero is probably your number one for now, I'm going to give you combined tasks of, do you think anything will unseat it, and why, if you were to give me a short pitch, would it stay there or would it maybe be unseated?
Titanfall might unseat it only because Destiny would probably unseat it, but that's
both next year. Both of next year, man.
Titanfall is set for this year.
Whoa! No way.
I believe so. Let me double check.
It's launch window for the Xbox. I thought it was 2014.
For the
2014.
Oh, all right.
According to GiantBomb.com, Q1 2014.
I thought it was day one release or whatever.
They're pushing it as if it was that, but it's not, sadly. It's Q1 2014.
Oh,
alongside Infamous Second Son, that's going to be an interesting fight.
Alongside Watch Dogs also got pushed to 2014.
Bullshit. Don't lie to me.
Next year, guys, is going to be awesome.
Don't lie to me. Let me see Watch Dogs.
I thought I heard that along with Titanfall.
I would hate you if... No, it's still 2013. Cool. That is a date, I think. November 14, 2013 is Watch Dogs. All right. Good.
No, I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of big games I'll be excited for. Like, I am interested in Grand Theft Auto, but mm-hmm. at the same side, I am extremely disinterested in it because it's EA and really mostly because it's EA.
Wait, is it EA? I thought it was 2K. Is it?
Wait, which game?
Grand Theft Auto. GTA. Grand Theft Auto. It's 2K, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 2K.
It's 2K. Doubles in. You're all over the place today.
No. I am all over the place, but I thought, well,
Rockstar
if GTA...
is not owned by EA, for sure. Yeah, Rockstar. No, sorry, not 2K. I keep thinking 2K. It's Take-Two.
Take-Two. Oh, my God. Every time.
Actually, I just don't want to have to do an Xbox Live login if I get a PC version.
You won't have to because they are actually phasing out games for Windows Live.
Man, that's... Yeah,
That still might be an Xbox login because that's Xbox Live that I have to log into. Not games
for Windows. What I'm saying, though, is Games for Windows is going away before that game comes out.
Interesting. Interesting.
There will be no games for Windows. Therefore, you will not have a game for Windows.
But either way, login. But I
don't know what I'm talking about. So yeah, those are my three. Those are my 3.5 games that I'm interested in.
So why is Kentucky Route Zero? Why is Kentucky Route Zero your number one so far?
Story's awesome. Music's awesome. It takes place sort of in an area that I enjoy and revel in the folklore of it. Like the Appalachia of it.
Is it mainly like, because you showed me that game and I wasn't particularly impressed with it. Like, is it because it just really hit a chord with you specifically, or do you think it does warrant to be? Okay.
It hit a chord really well. I can understand why it didn't hit a chord with you, not to sound mean, but you are a person who likes dark, gritty movies and stories and I don't know if like a lighthearted Pan's Labyrinth would be something you'd enjoy.
Oh, I fucking love Pan's Labyrinth.
I don't know. I said lighthearted.
One of my favorite movies of all time was Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, and I thought you'd like Kentucky Route Zero, but clearly not the case.
Yeah, Kentucky Route Zero is more along the lines of that area, and that folklore just doesn't hit a tune with me. But it's cool that it did with you. And you think at the moment that it'll be your game of the year, and that's kind of interesting to me. Durin, do you want to go next, or shall I go?
I'll go ahead.
Let me guess if this is on your list. Okay, let me guess parts of your list. I'm going to wait. Okay, but let's make sure.
Guess Final Fantasy,
three games.
Yeah, three games, and I just need to make sure here. You have not finished. Have you? Did you finish Bioshock Infinite?
So there will be games on my list that I have not finished.
Okay. Did you finish The Last
of
Us?
Yes, I did finish Infinite.
Okay, but you didn't finish The Last of Us.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so I'm going to guess that Bioshock Infinite and Final Fantasy XIV are on your list.
No.
Wow, all right. Okay, surprise. Go. This is interesting now.
While I enjoyed the story of Bioshock Infinite, I've talked about before the gameplay. It was a game that just didn't feel like it needed combat, and that
all right.
I really, really, really enjoyed that game, but I wouldn't have it on a top three at least.
Wow.
So my first game, again, no specific order, would probably be Monaco.
Holy shit. All right. Cool. That's an interesting... Wow. Indies have a big presence here, apparently. That's cool. All right. Monaco.
I had so fucking much fun with that game with some friends. And nice. I really am sad that we haven't gone back and played more of it because we never beat it. Oh. But goddamn, that game is so good. It's just the chaos and it's
and just to be clear, that's Monaco, What's Yours Is Mine, and that's like that yes. weird like pixel arty like theft simulator.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term. it's like a multiplayer only, right? Is it multiplayer only or does it have a single player as well?
You can play by yourself, I think.
Okay.
But that'd be really hard to do.
Right.
I'm not sure how that
works. Because we actually haven't talked about Monaco on the show, so.
Okay. Yeah, I have no idea. I've never actually tried playing it by myself. I've only played with friends, so I can't really see specific either way. So I would say another one. Oh God, did this release this year? Hang on. Give me a second. I would say, okay, yes, it did. Okay. This is one that I haven't finished, but I played most of it. Tomb Raider.
Wow. this list is interesting. Okay, so that, man, I wish you were doing ordered list. I wish you were doing ordered list.
I've been a big fan of Tomb Raider since the original game.
Okay, all right.
And I was one of the few that actually didn't hate the direction that Crystal Dynamics was taking the game.
Okay.
With like Underworld and stuff. I actually really enjoyed Underworld.
All right. So you actually have a lot of equivalents to Garnet Lee of Shaq News fame. He liked it.
Yeah, I loved Legend. It was just way too short.
Yeah.
I loved Underworld. I've played some of Anniversary and I've liked what I played of it, but it's weird because it's kind of this odd mix of new Crystal Dynamics Tomb Raider, but it's still like 30 hours because it's still the old game too.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't quite as great, but yeah. But going to this newer one, I really liked the direction that they've taken that game, and All the maiming of Lara aside, because I think that was blown way fuck out of proportion for what it was.
Sure.
I think that they've set her up to be an even more interesting character, which is the thing that I feel like was always lacking with that game. Mm-hmm. The adventures have always been fun. The gameplay has always been fun. But Lara as a character was always very fucking two-dimensional.
Right.
They tried to do a little bit of that in Underworld with her like looking for her dad and finding out that he had been like taken to some fucking other plane of existence or some shit. Way off the deep end with it. But then Tomb Raider's always done that. I mean, hell, the original game had dinosaurs.
Right.
And this new one's no different. It goes off the rails too. But I liked it in this one. They're actually like, she is a person. She has a personality. She has a background. Like by the end of the game, not because they maim her in every chance they can, but by the end of the game, you do care about her as a person, or at least by the point in the game that I'm at, which is probably a little over 3/4 of the way through.
I'm honestly waiting for that game to come on Steam sale to check it out. But
the gameplay is solid. It's the gameplay to me. It's like it's what Uncharted should have been gameplay wise.
Oh, those big words. Them's fighting words, Doran.
No, because Uncharted had a great story, great characters, great writing, had some of the fucking worst combat I've ever played in a third-person shooter.
Man.
The floaty shooting was terrible. The inaccuracy of the aiming, because it was just this giant circle.
I'll agree with you for that in three, but two felt real good to me. So, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Right, so that's the second of my three games.
Okay, all right. Before you get to the last, do you remember what your 2012 top couple were? Just to give people some context.
Fuck! What the hell came out last year? I think.
Wow.
I remember that I refused to have Skyrim on my list because it was broken at launch.
That was 2011, man.
Was I thought?
Last year was Mass Effect 3, Diablo 3, Darksiders, Guild Wars 2. None of these ringing a bell.
I think I had Guild Wars 2 up pretty up there at the time.
Okay. All right. Sure.
I don't know.
Listen to last year's podcast. Kind of you'll hear it.
I don't play every game that comes out, so it's
right.
It's kind of It's kind of weird.
Okay. So last one.
My third game because like. I want to have Final Fantasy on that list, but I feel like I feel like I need to play more of it before I can really make that kind of call.
Right.
So maybe that's something that might be added to my list later on.
Mm-hmm.
So again, going back to the games that I have played that have come out this year that I played enough of, or maybe not enough of, I've played enough of the content that is there to actually judge it. Oh man. I want to say Dive Kick. But I don't know the lasting power of that game well enough to know whether it warrants a spot.
Man,
like it's really fun. I don't know that it'll still carry that fun 2 weeks from now.
Jeez, well, I personally don't think it will. But it's up to you. I think people will approach that game differently. So let's see how you stick with it. But this has been like a weird top couple. So all right. So your follow up would be. Which of those do you think is number one, and do you think anything will unseat it, and why?
Right now, I would probably say, I guess between Monaco and Tomb Raider, because that's the only two I can truly decide on 100%.
Sure.
Between those two, I would say probably Tomb Raider.
All right.
Only because I it more so has to do with how horribly that game could have gone, especially given like leading up to the release of it. Like everything we were seeing was like on rails. You're moving forward,
wow!
And then something bad happens, quick time event, and that's it. And so I was really, really afraid of what that game was going to actually turn out to be.
Right.
So I was incredibly pleasantly surprised to find out that it's actually an incredibly fun game.
Man.
So right now that would be top. As for it getting dethroned, I think Watch Dogs pretty much. Unless that game just absolutely fails, that's going to be easily three for me.
Interesting.
Final Fantasy 14, obviously, for me, if it continues to be as fun as it seems to be, which I'm afraid to say that it will, because, again, Guild Wars 2 was in my top five, at least I know that for a fact, I believe, with last year. So things can change. But it's definitely up there, and it is, it's definitely the kind of MMO that I seem to really connect with. So we'll see.
Cool. But
definitely Watch Dogs. I think Watch Dogs has the potential to be like number one for me, I think, really.
Wow.
Like I'm gonna pull up Brad here and say that I think Watch Dogs has a chance to be number one game of the year. Because it seems like while what it's doing doesn't seem as unique anymore because fucking mm-hmm. everybody's already copying it and it's not even out yet.
Yep.
It definitely was. It's a unique concept, or at least was a unique concept when it was announced. Mm-hmm. And it's a concept that seems really, really interesting. And I'm really intrigued by the way multiplayer is being handled in it.
The crazy thing is, I think it was the GameSpot UK guys got a chance to play it, and they said the multiplayer really works, which is really interesting.
Well, and I like games that are doing that kind of thing with multiplayer, because I feel like multiplayer needs a shakeup. We need not everything needs to be fucking deathmatch and capture the flag. Like,
yeah,
do something different.
We need a game like Titanfall.
Oh, we got deathmatch and capture the flag.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but
no, but like but no, more like, than I, that, like the just running around shooting people, that could use a
shakeup as well.
Plugging Titanfall, but that could use the shakeup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Cool.
So yeah.
And
that's what
so mine right is really fucking boring compared to you two, because you guys got really interesting picks. So all right, my top two are pretty obvious.
Wait. Persona 4 did not come out in any fashion this year, correct?
That is correct. No, that was last year.
That's right.
Yeah, let's just put this up front. My top three last year of games I actually played, instead of what I put in order to bump up Giant Bomb's community votes, would be Persona 4 Golden, number one. Guild Wars 2, number two. And number three would be Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor 2 on the DS. So really random, but like the other games were on. Yeah. Guild Wars 2 specifically. Two random Atlas Japanese games and Guild Wars 2, my top three. But
which is like, a game that some would say looks Japanese.
It would have made a lot more sense if like instead of that you had like Ni No Kuni. Like that list would have made a lot of sense then.
But like other games were in my top 10. Like Mass Effect 3 was in my top 10, Diablo 3 was in my top 10, Darksiders 2 was in my top 10. But just those are my top three. So I tend to like the kind of Japanese flavor. And this year is like the complete freaking opposite. So let me have a look. I actually have an ongoing list on Giant Bomb, so I can just refer to it. Number one, two are boring because we've talked about it in the show extensively before. But number one is The Last of Us. Number two is Bioshock Infinite. I'm going to be really shocked if anything shakes those two from one and two. And it's weird because like if I was to pick top three games I played this year rather than top three games that came out this year, it would probably be The Last of Us as number one, To the Moon as number two, and Bioshock Infinite as number three. But that the To the Moon came out like fucking forever ago. So actually leaves me in a weird spot because number three is kind of where the fight is. I on my list, I have DMC Devil May Cry, Gone Home, and Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Trilogy HD and Phoenix Wright is, to be honest, my current number three, though that may change because so Phoenix Wright is the HD version came out on iPad this year, so I kind of got in by luck because I actually played the original DS games this year and I freaking love this. I brought them up many times on this podcast because I love those games. That's the right kind of wacky, stupid, crazy Japanese shit that I freaking love. Like, for example, my Game of Year 2011 list was like Ghost Trick, Catherine, and Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor 1. Like, which is like wacky Japanese is what I tend to love, and Phoenix Wright is just in that sweet spot. But I feel kind of wrong because I didn't play the HD version this year, and from looking at the art, it just like lost something. Like they up-res the art, and they like, you know, those like weird programs you can use to take pixel art and make it like vectory and like smooth. It kind of looks like they did that to it. It just looks weird and bad. So that might get knocked down just because I didn't actually play that version of the game this year. Of the other two, DMC Devil May Cry and Gone Home, that Gone Home would only get that spot if I felt like putting it there as a statement. Because I actually kind of do like the way it went. Like, you're talking about Bioshock Infinite and how that game could have been fine without the shooting. Gone Home is kind of like an argument in that direction as well. And I kind of like that. I like the fact that it's a game that doesn't revolve around violence, around overcoming obstacles of a violent nature. It's just exploration and good storytelling, or relatively good storytelling, and just like an interesting progressive plot that wouldn't have been attempted a couple years ago. But if I was to speak from my heart, it would be DMC, because I popped that game back in when I got my new video card, and that game running at max settings at 60 frames a second looks and feels so good. That game just plays so good. Oh my god. Like, you were talking about how you like how Tomb Raider plays compared to Uncharted. DMC plays good compared to any game. That game is just fucking fantastic. It just feels good no matter what you do. It's really responsive. It just, and everything's smooth. Yeah. The animations are beautiful.
Was that this year?
That was this year. It was really early this year.
Okay, I'm gonna go back and play that, because that may end up pretty up there, because I remember really enjoying that.
Yeah, and it is staggeringly pretty. It is probably the prettiest game that came out this year, and just there's some interesting things with the art. So yeah, those are my top three. Like, if I was speaking from the heart, it would be The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite, and DMC Devil May Cry. But if I let it slide and put in the HD version, Phoenix Wright would be number three, which it currently is on my list on the site. As for what will dethrone them, who wants to take guesses as to what may dethrone any of those three for me? Duran, do you want to take a guess? What do you think my tastes
Persona,
are?
Persona 5 isn't releasing this year, so
that's true.
That.
Yeah, you're pretty solid on that.
However, Shin Megami Tensei 4 is out this year, right?
It's true, and I'll probably be buying it this year. That is correct.
So I think that stands a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton.
That's next year, but Phoenix Wright 5 is this year.
Oh, it's next year?
Yeah, okay. Phoenix Wright 5 is this year.
Phoenix Wright 5, I think, has a chance to be up there in the top three. Uh-huh. Then.
Yep.
Let's see that. Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh hell. Well, I know Zillia won't.
Yeah, that was trash.
That one.
Yep.
Shit.
Thurbleton, any guesses?
I think there's like a cat in the room that we should be like guessing, but I can't.
Oh no, not necessarily.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think of what came out on the Vita or what's coming out on the Vita.
There. Durin's doing really well. I'm gonna say that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that spends all of my knowledge of Japanese games releasing this year.
All right. So if I was to do a group of games that could unseat those, one of them would be Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
God damn it.
Okay, Brad.
Because if Brad loved it and Vinny loved it, I really need to, I was expecting to talk about it this week, but it was pushed back for PC to September 3rd to release like alongside the PlayStation release. So we won't be able to talk about that till actual game of the year, but that could be there. And I'll probably end up talking about it on the show next week. Also, yeah, Shin Megami Tensei 4 absolutely could possibly get there. Watch Dogs? I'm a huge fan of Assassin's Creed, so Watch Dogs, if it's like the change Assassin's Creed needed, Jeff always said, like, how awesome would Assassin's Creed be? It was just set in modern times and you played as the main character dude. I've forgotten his name. Nolan North. That guy. Desmond. Yeah. If you just played as him, like, if Watch Dogs is just like that feeling of just the movement and the freedom, even though it's a different kind of freedom, obviously, with the hacking and stuff compared to be able to jump anywhere and kill anything. But it's a different kind of freedom, but it's got that open world feel. It'll probably run really well on next-gen systems, and they're probably going to get it for next-gen systems. And it seems like that game is not all about the gun combat, which I'm really excited for, because most of the stuff they've shared recently has just been about hacking, melee, and just a bit of guns, but not much. So that could be up there. But also Fire Emblem. Like, when I get my 3DS or 2DS, whichever one I decide on, I'll be picking up Fire Emblem.
So are you going to be playing it on the way it was meant to be played, or on the easy mode?
Easy mode. I already decided.
With that game, I'll take a stance. With like with other games, like XCOM and whatnot, you can play it a little bit more fairly if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like that game, a lot of people, a lot of the community are pushing for that to be the way it needs to be played.
You know what? Look, maybe I'll be guilted into it, but I think I'm going to play Fire Emblem on easy mode. Not easy mode, but like just the one where people don't permanently die is the mode I would go for. Because I don't know, like I love Persona for the characters, and the characters in Fire Emblem are supposedly really, really good, and I don't want to miss out on that kind of shit. So, so yeah, Fire Emblem would be up there, and let's see, these are all essentially competing for spot number three, because I don't think anything will actually compete with The Last of Us. To be honest, like to be absolutely fair, I don't think anything's going to beat The Last of Us. Maybe Brothers or Watch Dogs would beat out Bioshock.
Maybe I think I need to go back and play more of The Last of Us too, because
it was
a fun game, but
it wasn't as amazing as
everyone seemed like to make it.
Well, it's so, about the story and whether it connects with you, because that game is the right kind of dark that I fucking love. And yeah, it's darker than The Road, and it's just my kind of game. But if I was to pick a single game that would hit number three or maybe even number two, it would be, you're right, Phoenix Wright. Phoenix Wright 5 could be it. Man, that game. All right, so, and with that, we can move to the final part of this Game of the Year thing, which is us guessing what Giant Bomb's top three are going to be for the year.
Dude, I couldn't even begin. I mean, Brad likes Brothers. I have no idea.
Thurbleton, do you want to? I'm going to guess. I'm going to bet Saints Row 4 is not going to be in the top three.
I'm guessing Last of Us and Saints Row will probably be on the list. Mm-hmm. Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite will be competing. Jeff will have some racing game.
Really?
Maybe Drive Club.
Really?
Not at the top, but just in his
somewhere
top 10.
In there. I could see Forza 5 being
Forza 5. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm trying to nail down top three. That's the one I like. The rest of it is more like
even they don't know how the rest is going to land. So yeah, whatever. But top three, because I wouldn't have guessed Far Cry last year. That came out of nowhere. It was just amazing. So
and Divekick.
Whoa. Okay. All right. Durin, do you think you're going to hazard a guess?
I predicted freaking Gabe Newell would be on the Sony stage. I just go for the most bombastic prediction possible.
I agree with you. I don't think Saints Row 4 is going to be on their list. I think that it's going to get a mention, but it'll be one of the things that like Jeff will mention it and be like, I'm not going to try to fight for it because it wasn't even as good as the last one.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like I know he likes it enough that he did fucking everything in it.
Mm.
So he was. I think he said he was level 50, by 2/3 of the way through the game. So.
And I think he's playing through it
clearly
again.
Clearly, he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So clearly, he enjoyed it. I don't think it's going to make top three.
Yeah.
Maybe if they decide to bring back the Northeast, it'll make an appearance.
Mm. Maybe.
How can you beat a game in the Northeast, the best game with Nolan North, when the voice is straight up Nolan North?
Man.
True.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a Baker's this year.
Yeah,
for the best Troy Baker, because freaking Baker's Bioshock, dozen. Last of Us, and Saints Row.
I'm calling here. Top 12 Troy Baker games. Baker's Dozen.
That's pretty good.
I don't care. I don't care that Baker's Dozen is 13. They won't think about that.
Indeed.
I think Bioshock Infinite is probably a shoe-in for the top three.
Yes.
They all enjoy that game immensely.
Yes.
Enough to have a live show devoted to talking about the ending of it.
Exactly.
Well, and then is the DLC that's supposed to come out, is Burial at Sea set to come out before the end of 2013?
I think first half is this year. Or maybe not. I know the second half is this year.
So that'll definitely make Brad's top. Because just whenever it comes to good games or questionable games with DLC attached to them, I'm certainly not giving him crap for Mass Effect.
Indeed. Oh man, fucking.
But yeah, I think that Bioshock's definitely going to be top three. Mm-hmm. I think if Jeff can get himself to actually come around to playing through The Last of Us, then it'll be up there. I think he's going to have a really hard time doing that.
I'm going to bet that The Last of Us isn't even going to be in the top three. I don't think enough of them are going to play through that game for them to legitimately consider in the top couple. I think it'll be somewhere in the top 10 because obviously like, Vinny plays
if
through
they
it.
Do, but it'll definitely be up there, but I think that most likely it's going to get like an honorable mention, kind of a this should be up here, but unfortunately because of the circumstances, not enough of us played it.
Exactly.
Because like Jeff keeps saying, like that he's going to go back to it for Game of the Year reasons.
But, yeah, so does like, Brad. But
But like I understand. I totally understand why he's having a hard time doing that, and I don't think he's going to.
Yeah, I don't think any of them are. Maybe Brad might do it, but to be honest, I don't care about Brad's opinion over that game. So
I don't think Brad will either. I think that it's for the same reason that Jeff is having a hard time going to. I think Brad would have an even harder time.
Yeah. So. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be there. So I think freaking Bioshock Infinite's a shoe-in for number one at the moment. But Watch Dogs, if that game's as good as it seems to be, could freaking take a
chance
it.
To be up.
Yeah.
I don't think Assassin's Creed 4 is going to be up there. I think that a lot of people are hoping that to be way better than it's going to turn out to be.
Yeah.
I don't. Aside from the obvious of Bioshock, like everything else is just kind of up in the air.
Yeah, Bioshock.
I say obvious Bioshock, but it's not on mine, so, you know, whatever.
And if this year works out badly, like it could be freaking Bioshock, then Brothers, then freaking Saints Row or some shit in top three.
Dive I think Jeff can fight for Dive Kick.
That's kind of cool. That would be cool if he does. That would be cool if he does. And with that, that is our main topic for this week. This has been a long ass show. I don't think
that's our podcast this week.
Yeah, I don't think we have time to go into further console wars rumination. Maybe we'll do it another week or closer to release. TGS, I think, is going to be really important because I think Sony still has some games to announce because they announced more launch lineup games like at freaking Gamescom, like Resogun. A lot of people like that those Stardust like games, the Geometry Wars games, so that's going to be really good. So we'll see. And with that, thanks for listening to us. We have plugs. Thurbleton, any plugs this week?
Twitch.tv/Thurbleton. That's cool. The streaming thing. I didn't do a stream of this week's show, but only because I thought it would be a short one, and I'd quickly get out the door to entertain my friend from in town.
Right.
He's fallen asleep, so it's okay.
Durin, plugs.
I'll also say if you have any suggestions for it, in case you stuck with us this long, for the as a podcast as a whole, at the end of the year when we do Game of the Year stuff, we do it a little bit differently in that we do like favorite Giant Bomb videos or stuff like that. Yeah. If you have any suggestions for top 10 Giant Bomb sort of stuff you want us to debate and figure out for the community, let us know. Like on our Twitter, @TheLincolnCast on Twitter.
Yay. Nice.
Or Durin. @TheLincolnCast@gmail.com.
I don't really have any plugs.
Cool.
So PC Gaming Hub, I guess. Well, I'm going to toss that into noob.
I'm not putting that in the show.
I don't know. I logged in there once the last week when we did some Gary's Mod stuff.
Yeah. Let me just make sure. I'm just gonna go through my notes here to see if I have anything interesting to talk about. No, just another shout out to Lizm. Sorry if you wanted me to say your whole name, but I'm going to err on the side of caution on that one. I'm going to say that GDX 660 Ti is not a bad card, especially for its price. And that's pretty much it. That XCOM game is pretty good. I might just plug, for no reason, XCOM in the show notes, because... That's still a good game, y'all, apparently, even though I didn't believe it last year. And with that, thanks for listening to this episode of the Scotchcast. I'm not sure what we're doing next week. We might do a LinkyCast, might do a Scotchcast, depends how it goes down. This year's heating up, man. We're getting to November. Just 3 months to go before new consoles. Bye.